I smoked crack October of 2005, a month before my 15th birthday. I was drinking alcohol for the first time, probably in kindergarten. And then in fourth grade, I was smoking cigarettes, fifth grade weed, seventh grade cocaine. I never had anything I was good at. So I never played sports. I struck out in t-ball. And as soon as I found drugs, I liked the entrepreneurship of it. I liked selling it. I liked the culture of it. Dude, I'm a professional liar. I'm super conniving. I'm robbing drug dealers to survive. Other crack dealers are like looking for me. He's telling people he'll pay them for your address. I was like, how much? He was like, bro, he's gonna kill you. He's gonna shoot your house up. And I was like, let's give him a fake address Let's split the money. People just find it hard to believe that there are plenty of kids that come from good families that end up drug addicts. Man, I wanted to do drugs because I was just a crazy kid. But then I was like, how crazy would it be if I got clean?
In this episode, we dive into the remarkable journey of an entrepreneur, an advocate for personal growth and recovery. From battling substance abuse in his teenage years to founding his own drug rehab centers and venturing into the adult entertainment industry. Teddy Tarantino, what's up, baby?
Welcome back to the MBH podcast, Money Buys Happiness. Guys, appreciate you tapping in. As always, you know what to do. Like, subscribe, leave a comment. We got merch dropping soon. You guys have been asking for it. I've been teasing it on the gram. It's coming. I promise you guys, it is coming. Okay?
Yes.
Follow us on Snapchat. You know what to do. Exclusive content on there. Bro, we're all over. You know what to do.
Follow us on X.
Yeah, yeah, true.
Because we've been getting censored on YouTube, so we're posting the episodes on X as well.
Mm. We're actually doing like 10 times the views.
It's been great. So yeah. Check us out there. I think it's at the MBH pod.
Yeah, at the MBH podcast. Yeah. And for our listeners, I love you guys too. Five stars on Apples. Apples.
Apples, all the apples. Give us five apples.
Give us five apples on Apple. With that being said, Ernesto, who the fuck is in the building right now?
All
right,
in this episode, I got a sexy intro for this one. Ooh, okay, this is different.
Fire me up.
In this episode, we dive into the remarkable journey of an entrepreneur, an advocate for personal growth and recovery. From battling substance abuse in his teenage years to founding his own drug rehab centers and venturing into the adult entertainment industry, Teddy Tarantino, what's up, baby?
Yes, sir.
Hey, what's up, guys? Thank you for having me. No, I just want to say I normally don't sound like this. I am a little sick, but I'm getting better. I feel better. I'm just congested.
Appreciate you being here, even though you're not 100.
Absolutely.
You know, and appreciate the piece of art.
Yes.
Brian. Cool, yes. Cool.
We're going to pop that up.
Yeah, we'll pop it up.
For sure, because that's beautiful. For anyone that might not know you or who you are, what you do, give us a little background.
Born and raised in South Florida. Was on drugs my whole childhood. And then as soon as I got clean, I got like really into like getting other people clean. And it just made so much sense to me that I just thought like, if I could show other, like, I don't know, I was so into getting other people clean.
Yeah.
And then when people would doubt that other people get clean, it was like a challenge. Like people would be like, oh, they could never get clean or whatever. And seeing people get clean to me is like restoring old cars. True. Like, you know, in Fast and the Furious, when that beat up Supra pulls up. Yeah. But like someone who could restore a car like doesn't see a beat up Supra, like they see the potential. True. So like I never thought I could get clean, and like a lot of people didn't think that I could get clean. And then as soon as I did, I just kind of started to see that it really just is a formula. And if anybody follows that formula, anybody can get clean. Mm-hmm. And then I had a humble first 5 years clean. 5 years clean. I did motorcycles for a while. I had like a little business, and then I did drug and alcohol rehab. And then I did adult stuff, adult entertainment. You know, I've always liked to have fun. And a lot of people's biggest fear is when I get clean, I'm not going to have fun anymore.
True.
Which you should abstain from fun for like a year, 2 years. Just play it safe for a little bit.
Okay.
But after like 5 years, I started to wild out a little bit.
Okay. You know? Yeah. So when did you first get introduced to drugs?
Dude, I was drinking alcohol for the first time, probably in kindergarten.
Okay.
What?
Yeah.
So like, that's like six, 7 years old.
Something
like that.
Maybe 7 years
old. How does that even happen?
I was at a family party and, like all the kids were in like the other room and like, no one told me this is alcohol. No one showed me what it was. I just knew that the adults were drinking it. And I just always wanted to do what the adults were doing.
Okay.
And I just went and started drinking I remember the first thing I ever drank was Bailey's chocolate, because I thought chocolate, you know,
yeah.
It tasted horrible. And then I started drinking wine coolers and I got drunk for the first time. And then in fourth grade, I was smoking cigarettes. And then fifth grade, weed. Seventh grade, cocaine. And then
how does that happen? Is this, are you influenced by the people around you? Was it the area that you grew up in?
So to become an addict, it's like a recipe, right? So everybody has a little bit of like environment, genetics, predisposition, you know, of your heritage or whatever, your environment, being in like a drug area or whatever. And then you have like trauma and experience and stuff. For me, I have it like in my family a lot, but my personal family wasn't on drugs. Like my mom wasn't on drugs. My dad wasn't on drugs. Yeah. But I just had like instances where it was just a lot of like curiosity killed the cat. Like I was just was so, I'm one of those people who's probably born an addict. Like okay. There was just something in me that like, dude, I just was attracted to drugs. Like I read Tiger Woods' autobiography when I was a kid. Bro, this dude was playing golf when he was in diapers. True. Like there's videos of Tiger Woods hitting a golf ball in diapers. It's crazy, like putting, you know? And it's like he just touched the golf club and this kid just fucking took off.
Yeah.
And it's like when you're a drug addict, you can either bloom late in life where like your drug addiction happens late, or you could be someone like me where like, dude, as soon as I touched drugs, it was like Tiger Woods touching a golf club. As soon as I did alcohol, I was just interested in the next thing. And the next thing was like cigarettes.
Yeah.
And then the next thing was like weed. And I didn't need a lot of people pressuring me. I just needed like somebody a little bit far away to show me a little bit. Like I didn't need a full gasoline tank to get me started. I just needed a little drop and I would figure it out.
Yeah.
You know, and the internet, bro, I remember I was like building bongs off YouTube videos when I was like fucking in fifth grade.
See, but what's interesting to me is like, how does a 7-8 year old even get away with that? Like, you know what I mean? I'm trying to picture myself at that age. I mean, first of all, I was playing soccer. I wasn't doing cocaine at seven, but like, I'm trying to think like, how do you even like you must've been pretty invested. You must've been pretty invested in like getting the job done to be able to like sneak it around, I guess, your family and stuff.
So one thing you said that like you played soccer, like, dude, I never had anything I was good at.
Okay.
So I never played sports. I couldn't, like, I struck out in T-ball, you know, like, okay. I couldn't play basketball. It's a true story. Like, dude, I wasn't good at sports. There's nothing I was good at. I wasn't good at drawing. Like, when I was in, like, third grade, I lived by a skate park, and I was good at skating. But as soon as we moved away from the skate park, I had nothing.
Mm.
So I had to find something quick, and I just didn't like anything. I was just, like, I was funny, and I was awkward, or whatever, I was chubby. And as soon as I found drugs, like, I like the entrepreneurship of it. I like selling it. I like the culture of it, you know? And
so you were obviously using, but you were also selling, like you were trying
Immediately. Like immediately anything that had to do with that drug, I was immediately in, like I became that drug.
Okay.
But like once you like addicts learn things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, dude, I learned the metric system. You know what I mean? Like, I know how to convert grams to ounces. You know, like, I figured shit out. Like, I learned how to, like, pick up the keys without making a sound. Like, I learned how to put Visine in my eyes. I learned how to put, you know, like, cologne on. I learned how, like, bro, if you smoke weed, it gets in your hair. Your hair is, like, the hardest part. Wow. So it's like you got to make sure your hair doesn't smell. Your fingertips when you smoke a joint. Like, I used to smoke joints with gloves on as a kid, you know, because I didn't want your fingers are so hard to clean, you know? And then it's like, bro, I would bring a change of clothes so I wouldn't smell like weed. So I had to become sneaky and learn how to be sneaky and learn how to lie to the point where, dude, you fast forward 5 or 6 later, dude, I'm a professional liar. I'm super conniving. I'm sneaky. I know how to hide. I know how to cover my traces. I know how to think about a lie step before you even thought to ask the question.
True.
You know, I start to get good on my feet. Like I'm responsive.
Yeah.
I know how to get you to think you're my friend so I can set you up 2 weeks from now to rob you. Like I just learned these types of things in drug addiction.
Yeah. You know? It's like a culture almost.
Yeah. And like when someone robs you for the first time, which happens to everyone in the drug game, like you're going to get skimped. Someone's going to fuck you over. Like when that happens, you start to prepare yourself, kind of like in boxing. Like, dude, the first time you get punched, someone's like, put your hands up. Now you got your hands up. So I learned how to be guarded. And some of these things are healthy. And some of these things is helpful for entrepreneurs, like marketing, connections, all this stuff. But in the way that we're taught in the drug world, it's a toxic, conniving, parasitical, predatory type of behavior that people learn in jail and stuff like that. So I grew up with toxic masculine energy. You know, I grew up with, like, you know, treating women like shit, fuck someone over before they fuck you over, never, ever, ever tell the truth.
Yeah.
You know?
Trust nobody.
Don't trust. No one's your friend.
Yeah.
You know, I had some of my closest friends skimp me. One of my, like, my best friend, bro, he skimped me. And I remember being like, why would you do that? Yeah. And he's like, well, when I bought what I bought, I got skimped. So now you're going to have to get skimped too. And I remember just being like, damn, ain't nobody really your friend.
Yeah. At this point, I'm curious, like, did your parents have an inkling of, like, what was going on? I mean, you must, as good as you are covering up your traces, like, at some point, I mean, parents are parents. They always kind of know something's up. Was there a moment where were they kind of catching on to what you were up to?
So you're a creator and you've decided to step into the wonderful world of OnlyFans. Listen, good luck to you. However, we know it's not always rainbows and sunshine, all right? When you step into that kind of industry, that kind of world, you want to get involved there, you got to make sure your back is covered legally. There are a lot of slimy people in the industry. Got to make sure you're checked out and all the boxes are checked correctly.
Enter OnlyFirm. These guys are the real deal when it comes to legal support for OnlyFans models. Picture this, an experienced team of individuals who know the industry like the back of their hand. We got the three C's, all right? Content protection, they got you covered. Contracts, they got you covered. Copyright registration, they got you covered.
And here's the kicker, okay? They're not just some cookie cutter law firm. They pretend they know what they're doing, this and that. No, they understand all the unique challenges as an OnlyFans creator. So leave the legal headaches behind, okay? With OnlyFirm on your team, get back to doing what you do best, creating content for your fans, make sure they keep coming back, and they'll take care of everything on the legal side.
So do yourself a favor, check out their Instagram page at the OnlyFans Lawyer and shoot them a DM with any questions. You'll thank me later.
And for any more information on their services, check out www.onlyfirm.com. All right, let's get back to this episode.
Yeah, so I think my parents like thought that I was smoking weed and cigarettes. And my dad caught me smoking cigarettes one time. And he like screamed and yelled and then whatever. But I also knew that like if I kept up the image, I could almost do anything. So if I got good grades and my room was clean and I was pretty... well behaved, like I knew how to say yes ma'am, no sir, you know, I knew how to like behave in front of company, I knew how to behave in school. Like in school I would fuck off just enough to not get like a detention or something, but then I would still get good grades. But then I also knew, like, you know, smoke before school, you know, like I would do just enough to not get in trouble.
Yeah.
And then when I did get in trouble, they'd be like, well, you know, he got good grades or
he's still a good kid.
Yeah, he's still a good kid. He's charismatic. He's funny. You know, it was like cute, you know, for a little bit. And my dad would kind of get mad, but he kind of would like chill. And that all changed in eighth grade when I got arrested for the first time at school with like an ounce of weed and like a bunch of different little baggies. And that's when my dad like lost it.
Yeah,
like they were talking about giving me a felony because it was trafficking. I was probably 13 years old. Wow. At this time, like Young Jeezy had came out. I'm only listening to rap music. I think I'm a thug. You know, I live in a gated community. I got good parents. Like I'm not a thug. Like I've never won a fight, you know, but I will fight, you know, like my friends are probably seniors in eighth grade, I'm selling weed to kids that are seniors and freshmen in college. Mm-hmm. You know, like I'm going to high school keggers. I'm going to college parties. I'm stealing the car. I'm driving. Okay. I've been driving my mom's car since fifth grade. I taught myself how to drive. I love cars.
You're a demon, bro.
When people saw that, like, I just want to do hood rat things with my friends. Yeah. When that video came out, so many people sent it to me. Like, yo, that was you. And I was like, I know. I literally was, like, in fifth grade driving and selling weed.
Yeah.
You know?
Did you ever think maybe, like, I mean, at that point, you're still young, but did you ever think that you were on the wrong path, or did you think like you were doing the right thing?
Dude, at that time, I literally thought that me and my boys were going to have a boiler room, because I had just seen Boiler Room, that we were going to be like entrepreneurs. We were all going to be rich.
Yeah.
We're all going to sell drugs and do like some type of scams or whatever. Yeah. And that we were like the kings of Davie. Like in Davie, like Fort Lauderdale, that area, there was only a couple of us, not a couple, but maybe like 30 kids, in my opinion, at that time, that were considered like cool in my mind. Like if you didn't sell drugs and weren't in like my inner friend group, and my inner friend group at that time were like 7 years older than me. And by the grace of God, I like snuck in there because I'm friends with this kid who's, I'm friends with his older brother, and like they had known me since I was younger. And I would kind of act like way more older than I was. So at that time, it's like, if you weren't part of that group, you got robbed. We fucked your girl. We made fun of you. Like, and to me, we were all like thugged out gangsters, but we're all spoiled kids, like fucking driving our cars that our parents bought us. Yeah. You know,
that's interesting, because like you didn't have a tough upbringing.
No, not at all. I mean, dude, my dad would give me $100 randomly to go to the mall every once in a while. My parents had nice cars. I lived in a nice neighborhood, and there was kids that lived in the trailer parks that were like, because in Davie there's like $1 million homes and there's also like trailer parks.
Okay.
And it's like, dude, the kids in the trailer parks are like, bro, those kids robbed us. You know, like, bro, some of the private school kids were like, not to say they were like thugged out or in gangs, but they were tough kids. They would fight and whatever. And even as like, when I tell people like some stories, they think that I grew up in the ghetto, because I'll be like, I just said this on another podcast, like I was at the Heat game with my girl like a couple, maybe like 8 months ago, and I ran into my boy and I hadn't seen him in a long time. And I was like, damn, like me and him grew up together. Dude, he did 10 years for shooting up a car, you know? And then like, dude, I have probably like 3 or 4 friends that I grew up with that have either have murder charges or attempted murder charges that were a part of like my immediate friend group.
Yeah.
And like, not to say that they're, and like, growing up, I didn't think that they were killers, but somebody had beef with somebody else. They went to the swap shop, got a knife, and now they have knives that are hanging out. And then in self-defense, swung a knife and either killed someone or almost killed somebody. And I have multiple friends that that scenario has happened to.
When you see that, like when you see people you grew up with going through that,
mm-hmm.
how did that affect you? Like, did that make you think, holy fuck, like I gotta chill maybe?
No, it was cool.
Yeah, you were like, oh, that's dope, bro. Yeah. Wow.
No, bro, at the time, it was like, oh, did you heard so-and-so got an attempted murder charge? Yeah. You know, it was like, dude, at 13, 14, 15, like to me, having an ankle monitor and being on probation was like what happens to us,
you know? Yeah. Just levels, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like this, and like when I look back on it, it's so stupid. It's like, it really is like alpha dog, like kids that grew up in like this up in neighborhood that are like doing thug. Cause if you watch Alpha Dog, it's like a true story, but it's like these kids that grew up in a nice neighborhood with, you know, successful parents that are probably selling hundreds of pounds of weed or whatever. And dude, I had friends growing up that were 2-3 years older than me buying multiple cars from selling drugs, you know?
It's such an interesting thing. Like when I think about how like, I think about myself at that age too. And I'm like, you know, when I was 15, like I didn't think beyond maybe like the week ahead of me. And that's probably like thinking that's like, that was like the furthest I'd ever think.
The weekend.
Sometimes I wasn't even thinking about like 2 hours in front of me, you know, like in 2 hours in the future. And it's funny, just like the decisions you make back then and now being, you know, where we are now, it's like, I'm such a fucking idiot. Like, what was I doing? Right. It's normal though. Like to some extent, like you really don't think beyond the weekend. Like
as a kid, a month is almost a year.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like a summer is like two, like, like if your mom said you're grounded all summer,
you're done.
It was like you're in a prison bid.
Yeah.
Like all summer, dude, summer's 3 months, it's 90 days.
Yeah.
But as a kid, like one summer can change your whole life.
Of course.
You know, so you're molding your entire personality. So I might not have done drugs for 20 years, but the amount of drugs that I did and the things that I was doing at such a young age was so difficult for me to unravel.
Yeah.
And I had to relearn so many things that I was misinformed about, you know, mm-hmm. how to be a man, how to be respectful, how to operate. Like, I was still thinking, like, people are out to get me. Like, you, like, just always lying. I just was, like, when I tell people that I was on drugs most of my childhood, they feel bad for me, like, oh, whatever. But I wasn't, like, a cute, soft kid on drugs. I was, like, a mean, nasty person that when people heard my name, they're like, that kid's a scumbag.
Yeah. And was it, were you different on drugs? Like, completely different?
Yeah.
Yeah. How, like, okay, so when you say you were doing drugs, and obviously there's different kinds of drugs you were doing.
Yeah, yeah.
How much drugs were you doing on a daily basis?
So when I got arrested in eighth grade, that's when I started getting drug tested. When I started to get drug tested, I was like, dude, I can't smoke weed. Like, what the fuck am I going to do? Because weed stays in your system for 30 days.
The longest, right? Yeah.
It's the worst drug to do when you're getting drug tested. So then my one friend had dropped off coke at my house, and I tried it for the first time. And I remember doing it and thinking, like, I don't feel anything. And I called him, like, bro, I didn't feel anything. And he's like, what do you mean? I was like, all I did was play San Andreas all night.
Yeah.
You know? And my friend was like, well, that's kind of all it does.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, like, cocaine was this scary drug.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I just watched Blow. Like, all these movies were coming out. Cocaine Cowboys had just came out. These documentaries about South Florida. And I did cocaine. And, like, I've done. And at that point, and by eighth grade, I've done marijuana, I've been drunk like a whole bunch of times, I've done Xanax, I've done Valiums, and I've done shrooms. So I had done all these other drugs.
That actually like altered that, like, your perception.
Fuck you up. I did cocaine, I like could have done my homework faster, you know?
It's true.
You know, I played video, like I just didn't go to sleep. Like I didn't even think I was altered in any way.
Yeah.
I wasn't like fucked up, I could have a conversation, I did like half a gram.
Yeah.
So then I was like, whoa, this is crazy. And then when he told me how much it was, like, dude, how much is this? It was like this much coke. I was like, yeah. How much is it? Like, he's like, $25. I'm like, for a half gram?
Yeah.
You know? And he's like, yeah, it's a dub. You know, it's $20, $25, whatever. And then I was like, that makes no sense, because with weed, it's like so much more. But then when I realized that if you bought an 8-ball, you could get 3.5 grams for like 100, maybe 120, and then you could cut it, and then whatever. Then I started to be like, oh, shit. I only have to do 4 sales. I make my money back and then I get a free gram. So then, like, you know, the hustler in me started to be like, oh, this is way easier than selling weed. Then I thought that, like, I thought weed was cool. Dude, cocaine was like this whole other level of cool. It was like I was going to nightclubs, like not inside, but like I would meet people at nightclubs and sell them coke. You know, now when you go to a party, normally when you go to like a high school party, there's like a kegger and people are smoking blunts outside. But what I didn't know is that every high school kegger has an upstairs where there's like the coke room, yeah, where it's like only 4 people,
yeah, bathroom
vibe, and like 3 of the hottest girls, right? And it's like, dude, that, yeah, bathroom party.
You know? There you go.
Ernesto knows. You know? So it's like this secret. It was like way more like, dude, you had to knock to get in.
It was low key.
It was low key. Yeah. Girls were like, don't tell anybody I'm doing this, you know? And it's like, it was like so cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when I was like, oh, this is really cool. Then I start meeting like way different people. I'm like selling coke to people in their 30s.
Yeah.
I'm still 14.
So then,
probably still 13. So eighth grade, I become a total cokehead. Like, I started researching it. Dude, I started to read all about the cartel. I started to read about Colombia.
I thought he was the cartel. Right?
I thought I knew how it was made. I started listening to the Blow soundtrack. Like,
everything
about cocaine. Yeah. Dude, I know everything about Pablo Escobar and the Ochoa family and, like, yeah, everything, yep, bro. Like, I know the whole drama. I never even watched Narcos because I, like, read all those books.
Mm.
So when I would do a drug, I would really get the ins and outs and want to know all of it, because if I know more than you, I could like use it against you or feel better than or whatever.
True.
And fast forward a year later, everyone's doing pills.
Wow.
Dude, painkillers in South Florida was like crazy.
Like Oxy? Oxycontin.
Yeah. So when Oxycontin hit, I was probably in ninth grade, 2004. And there was more pain clinics in Broward County than McDonald's.
Come on.
Broward County dispensed more painkillers than some states combined. The county alone.
Wow.
The top 3 counties four painkillers was Broward, Miami, West Palm. In the country.
It was all here, of Florida.
Yeah. Why was it?
Dude, we are just the mecca for scam, for like law breaking. Yeah. Like if there's a scam, bro, don't tell nobody in Florida.
Yeah.
Because we're just like hustlers.
Yeah.
We don't care about laws. Like, dude, sometimes I go to other states and I see people like freak out about texting and driving, or like we just like, you don't really get in trouble here for like things that you would in other states.
Oh, true. Bro, we see that a lot too.
That is a fact. Texting and driving here is like the most normal thing.
Like stop signs and stuff like that. Bro, we get stopped for that in Toronto. Like,
we laugh, bro. We're driving. Again, we're used to like Canada, Toronto, like very liberal, like, democratic, whatever. And like, dude, over here, it's like, there's two cop cars, and the guy next to them or the girl next to them, bro, phone up, texting like it's nothing, right in front of the cop. You're like, oh, they don't care.
Yeah, the cops don't, like, dude, even, like, I had a giant lifted truck for a while, and dude, it would blow black smoke and like, you know, technically that's like not legal. In any other state, they would pull you over in 2 seconds and be like, this is fucking, I had a 16 inch lift. The tires barely stayed in the lane. Obviously, like the windows are like super tinted. Yeah. But like here, that's just like, we just don't care about
that's a little stuff thing. Like that. It's a little thing.
We're just different. Yeah. But they're like, a lot of the phone room scams all started in Florida, like, or have blew up in Florida.
What's a phone room scam?
What?
Yeah, what is that?
No, wow. I heard of that.
So like, call centers.
Okay.
So
okay.
Call centers are like a Florida like thing. Like a lot of call centers are in Florida. There's a lot of legit ones, but there's also a lot of scam ones. So a scam one would be like a fake, like a brokerage one where they would pretend to be financing your house. They're just stealing your money.
Wow.
There was like a big light bulb scam where they'd act like they were going to sell like your whole company, like all these light bulbs, and it was a scam.
Wow.
Anything you could think of, like, oh, like the crazy one that I have friends that are going to prison for this is disabled medical equipment, DME.
Okay.
So it's basically like a Medicare scam where they call all these Medicare people and say, hey, we're going to give you a brace or some type of disabled medical equipment. We're going to bill your insurance. Now they're calling people at an alarming rate. They're calling like thousands of people a day. I'm pretty sure that's how the scam works. Well, they just like bully these people to give them their insurance information, bill their insurance. And like half the time they don't even get any equipment. These people are old. Medicare is for anyone over, I think, like 65. Mm-hmm. So these people don't even ask questions or say what it's their insurance. So they're just scamming their insurance. But there's people doing 10, 20 years in prison that have racked up billions of dollars. And they would have, you know, 100 people on the phone calling nonstop.
Wow.
I didn't even know that was here.
That's
like
what I was going to say. I didn't even heard of that. Because like, you didn't want to know.
I got to watch it. So, okay. So 13, 14, you're selling cocaine. How much money are you making at that age selling drugs?
In my mind, hundreds of thousands.
$100 for you is different.
In my mind, when I pick up an 8-ball, it's a kilo of coke. Yeah. Like in my mind, I think that I'm like George Junk in Blow.
Yeah.
I think I'm Pablo Escobar. When I would cut stuff up with aspirin and fucking what else would it be? Like hydroxycut.
Holy
you know?
Shit.
When I would like cut up coke with hydroxycut, I would think that I'm like a scientist. You know, I thought that I was
hydroxycut is that fat burning pill, right?
Yeah. So I would do like hydroxycut or some type of caffeine pill or something. And like when I was doing that, like I thought I was like a chemist, you know? Yeah. And literally I probably have $100, $200 and then I have an 8-ball, but I'm doing coke nonstop. Like I'm doing it in the morning, I'm doing it on Wednesdays, I'm doing it at night.
So what, a couple grams a day?
No, I'm probably doing 2 to 3 8-balls a week.
Okay.
But then I would have weeks where I would stop. I'd have 2 weeks where I'm like, I'm gonna chill, you know, go to the gym, chill out for a little bit, and then I would binge and do 2 days straight, 3 days straight, and then I would chill. But what happened was, well, I got sent to military school in 9th grade.
Wow.
And then in military school, I got introduced to OxyContin. When I came back from military school, everybody was doing OxyContin. And at the time, like, I didn't even like OxyContin. It would just make me throw up. Like, dude, every time I do these pills, I just throw up everywhere. But everybody was doing it. At all the parties, everybody was doing it. And I, like, did Xanax. I don't like pills. Like, I don't like Xanax because I get too, they, like, fuck me up too much. I don't really do, like, Valium or whatever. Maybe to come down, I would do it. But they were just you couldn't like get away from it. It was just everywhere. You would buy weed and this kid would be like, you want a Roxy? Or mm-hmm. like, what? No, you know? And then I, at the same time, got introduced to crack. Okay. So at 14 years old, I get introduced to crack and pills at the same time, Oxycontin. And I start to like Oxycontin. I start to like get the feeling of it. I start to do a lot of it. Then I start to learn that whole gamut with doctor shopping and getting people on prescriptions and going to different doctors and selling your prescription. And then I smoke crack. And I smoke crack October of 2005. A month before my 15th birthday. And when I was doing coke, I was like, I'll stop one day. I'm trying to slow down. The minute I smoked crack at 14 years old, I knew that I would struggle with this for the rest of my life.
Wow. Listen, that's when everything changed for
sure.
Dude,
when I smoked crack, I never bought powder cocaine ever again.
Wow.
I didn't even think about powder cocaine. And then it was less about selling and more about like, how can I just get more crack for myself? It wasn't even about selling or anything like that. Then,
how did you get introduced to it? I'm curious.
So this kid that I went to high school with knew a guy who had like, the story was, we called him Doc, DLC. He had like cancer, HIV, he was dying, all these, this is like the story, right? But he would sell his prescription for crack. So a lot of people who smoke crack, they would hustle pills and then just buy crack and not even do pills, or that they wouldn't really do a lot. Dude, this guy had Suboxone, Methadone, Oxycontin, Lortab, Valiums, morphine lollipops, liquid oxy, like any prescription you could think of. Wow. To me, it was like a god.
That's yeah. Doc, yeah, that's Doc.
I was
that's
like, dude, doc. This guy's god, you know? And he would smoke crack. And I remember being 14 years old and my friend took me there and I was selling powder at the time. And I remember he was like, I want to introduce you to somebody. So I went there and he was like, you're the kid who has like fire powder. Because at the time I was getting good coke, if that's like means anything. But but at the time, like I prided myself on being able to get like good coke, not just like any coke. Ernesto knows, you know, there's a difference, you know.
Calling me out.
Put the shades on it. Yeah. I know.
But it's like, you know, I would really try. I wouldn't just do any coke at the time. I would only do like really good coke. And I'll never forget. I sold him a half gram just to try it out. And he cooked it on a spoon. And he cooked up this whole half gram and he got this little crumb. And I thought he was gonna be mad at me because I've seen blow and when they cook it up, you could tell like how much of it is real coke. And he only got this little crumb. He put on this crack pipe and he hit the crack pipe. And I remember thinking like, this guy's gonna like flip out on me because he only got this little crumb.
Yeah.
I'll never forget. He was like, that's premium coke. And I was like, wow. What? And I was like, this guy spent $20 for one hit of crack.
Yeah.
And then I would keep going there and we'd buy pills off him. We'd hang out there and dude, like sometimes there'd be no AC, a green pool, people walking around with candles, smoking crack, no lights, no furniture. Wow. And I would just go there and I started to become like intrigued, like on this other level. Mind you, this is ninth grade.
Yeah.
You know,
it's crazy. How old is this guy?
40.
Okay. I was just going to say, yeah, he's not like a kid. Like you're saying. Mm-hmm. House, people's walking around smoking crack. It's crack clearly, house, yeah. It's a crack house to some extent. Yeah.
So is the crack what really like started spiraling you in the drugs?
So
was that when
looking
it started?
Back, it was spiraling from fucking kindergarten.
Yeah, yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But the nail in the coffin, you know.
So the nail in the coffin was crack, but then when I got dope sick for the first time, it was like, if it couldn't get any worse,
yeah.
I had no idea about physical opiate withdrawal. Like crack was like a fucking crazy psychotic girlfriend that you can't leave.
Yeah.
Bro, being an opiate addict was like being a fucking like stuck at Auschwitz. Like wow. You have to get up and march every single day. Wow. It doesn't matter.
So wait, I want to go back to the crack quickly. Because it everyone says, and everything that I've ever seen, read, uh-huh. heard, paused, they always say it's the most addictive.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
But I'm curious, and this is hard, because like I've done shrooms, people will be like, well, what did it feel mm-hmm. like? And it's like, it's tough to explain.
Yeah.
But if you had to explain the feeling of smoking crack, what How would you explain it?
So if you've done coke, it's very similar to coke. People like find that hard to believe.
Okay.
But like people, like when I started doing crack, people were like, what? You know, like nobody wanted to hang out with me. People couldn't believe it. And in my mind, I'm like, you guys do coke.
Yeah.
It's like, it's the same. It literally is the same drug. I can show you how to make it in 2 seconds and then you're just smoking it. So when you cook crack, you cool it, you heat it up, then you cool it down fast, and it comes into like this rock where like if you cut it, it doesn't turn into like a powder. It's like a lot harder and firmer.
Crystallized, right?
It's kind of crystallized, so when you burn it, it smokes more. If you burn coke, it'll kind of like melt. So it's more of like this, it's made for smoking. So when you smoke it, it's way more intense to where you would need to do so much coke to get the same feeling from like a $5 crack rock. So if you've, like there was times where I'd have psychosis on cocaine. I would do coke for a day and a half straight, 2 days, not sleep. And I would fucking be so paranoid and skittish. And I've also bought coke that I'm 100% sure was cut with meth. So I'd be super geeked up. If you've ever done coke, like a good coke is supposed to have like a up and then like you come down a little bit. If you've ever done coke where it's like up and down, that's meth.
You know? You did meth, buddy.
You did meth over there. Yeah, you know, yeah. I've done coke before where it's like, dude, after doing a bump, 5 seconds later, I'm coming down and I'm just like geeked the fuck out. I do another bump and you're hitting the ceiling. With crack, the difference is that when you smoke crack, even like shitty crack, you take a hit. So the thing with crack is like you take a hit, you hold it in. When you hold it in, that's like when it's really hitting you and you hold it in for as long as you can. The biggest difference is that you hear differently. So there's something with crack called like ringing the bells.
Okay.
Or like the train, whatever people want to call it. You get so high that when I exhale that smoke, if you guys are talking, it sounds like techno music.
Stop.
It sounds like... literally, it sounds like that's how fucking beaming you are. That's the... And like you really are like on a whole nother fucking planet. But I wouldn't say it's even like a good feeling. It's like doing a shit ton of coke. Uh-huh. It's like doing like 20 lines of coke all at once. Wow. Maybe even a little bit more than that. But if you've done coke, it's not that far off. But the thing is that's the first hit of crack. You do that for a day or two or even a couple hours, you do have psychosis. You start to hear things. I would get extremely paranoid. Dude, I would think people are coming out the fucking oven, you know? Okay. I would think people are coming out the oven. I would think fucking they're watching us through the fucking electrical outlets. Like, I would think that as soon as I took a hit, I was looking in the rearview mirror because the cops are behind us. Fuck. A dog would bark 5 houses down and I'd fucking almost throw up. Like,
come on.
Yeah. So the paranoia is crazy and how high it takes you is different too.
And then, okay, so then the transition from there, where do we go from there? And I'm curious, like, I mean, you're smoking crack now, you living at home?
Yeah, so I'm living at home. So at this point, my parents had already sent me to military school. I've gone to therapy. I've been arrested probably like 2 more times. I've done outpatient programs. Now I'm faking all my drug tests because I already got caught that one time they're drug testing. Now it's like, dude, I have pee in the fridge in the back with the frozen chicken. I have pee taped under the sink. You know, I have fucking a friend across the street he'll pee for me sometimes, you know. There's times my probation officer would fucking come and drug test me. I'm also underage, so they're not watching me pee.
True, because usually they watch you.
You. Yeah. So like, I'm also underage, so they're not like looking at my dick.
Yeah.
So it's like... But they are like, hey, drop to your boxers and then go in the room.
True.
Dude, this one time, dude, I was begging my friend to bring piss over. And he used to keep his frozen too. And he was like, I'm heating it up right now. I'm like, drop it off at the windowsill at my parents' bathroom right here. And dude, my probation officer there. Everyone's there. My whole family's about to do like an intervention on me. He's like not answering. He fucking comes. And then I open the windowsill. It's right there. I pour it in the thing. And he heated it up too, so it was like a little warm. Crazy. And fucking, dude, the lady was like, he's clean. And my parents were like, dude, look at him, he's green.
Yeah.
Like this kid. Like, my probation officer didn't know me off drugs. So my parents did. So my parents were like, he's not the same. But other people might just think I just look like that, you know? And my drug test was clean. And my parents didn't want to say, we think he's doing other drugs because I might like go to jail or something. So they didn't really know what to say. But at some point, my parents were just like, you know, bro, my dad tried yelling and screaming. He tried taking things away. He tried being nice. He tried like talking to me one-on-one. My mom's taking me to church. She's had people come over and pray over me. Wow. By the time I'm in 10th grade, dude, my dad wants nothing to do with me. My dad, it was like, you're going to die. You're going to be in jail. He would tell me this, like, you're going to end up in prison. When you turn 18, get the fuck out of the house. And at that point, I'm robbing drug dealers to survive. Like, wow. I don't have any money. I'm giving people fake drugs. I'm giving people a $20 bill wrapped up in a bunch of ones. I'm breaking into cars. I'm not showering. I have acne all over my back. I'm super pale. Nobody will sell drugs to me. Mm. I'm calling people for drugs and they're like, bro, you come over here and try that shit. We will fucking shoot you.
Wow.
Other crack dealers are like looking for me. I have a friend who was like, bro, I just went to go cop off Chris. He's telling people he'll pay them for your address. I was like, how much? He was like, bro, he's going to kill you. He's going to shoot your house up. And I was like, let's give him a fake address let's split the money. And he was just like, bro, like you're
gone.
Bro, yeah. I got jumped. I got jumped in like the middle of the Everglades by a bunch of kids, beat up from other drug dealers.
Why were you in the Everglades like that? Like,
they took me there.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So I had robbed this kid like a year ago and his friend also didn't like me cause I had robbed him or whatever. And I remember I had like 200 bucks on me from something and he randomly calls me, not the guy I robbed, his friend, but I know he doesn't like me. You know, I didn't know that he's also friends with another drug dealer I had robbed. But I know he's part of that crew who don't like me, right? And he calls me and he was like, yo, and I was like what do you want, you know what I mean? And he's like, will you take can you get me pills? And I remember thinking like, dude, why the fuck would I get you pills? And he says, I'll buy you one. And I was like, come pick me up. You know, not like I'll buy you five. Like he said, I'll buy you one. We're talking about a Roxy at the time, which were $10.
Yeah.
You know, at the time, Roxy 30s were $10. So I jump, I leave my house. I go to my neighborhood and the front entrance. He said, I'm going to pick you up in this F-150. I was like, okay, cool. So I get in the back of the truck and there's four kids and there's two kids up front and there's two kids in the back and I sit like, bitch. And I'm looking around and the kid on the phone isn't in the car.
Oh no.
And I'm like, dude, where's what's his name? And they're like, don't worry about it. And I'm in the car. I'm like, fuck. And dude, I had we talked about a couple of days before my dad had hugged me and he found a knife in my back. Tucked back here. And he's like, what is that? And I'm like, I don't know. He's like, why do you have a knife on you? Again, I'm probably 14 years old. You know, my dad's like, why do you have a knife? I'm like, I don't know. You might need it. And I used it to cut up Oxy 80s at the time. I probably wasn't thinking about self-defense. But I remember being in that car and being like, looking for my knife. Like, oh yeah, my dad took it away. But at that time, if I was getting jumped, I probably would have swung it around. I could have killed somebody. And then we started driving and we're going to the Everglades. And I'm like, no, dude, the dope dealer lives this way. And they're like, don't worry about it. And then we pull up to this random house and we get out the car and it's four people out the car. And then another car pulls up and it's this kid who I've done a crazy car chase with. And he pulls out the car. I'd robbed him 200 bucks. He gets out the car with two more kids and they just start beating the shit out of me.
That's insane.
But I had my money in my sock. They didn't even try to rob me. They just were teaching me a lesson.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
And they were probably 18. They knew I was young. They probably were like, bro, people have been letting this kid get off. Slide. Yeah. We ain't letting you slide.
Let's teach him a lesson.
When I got clean, I ran into him again. I was clean 6 months. And dude, they started chasing me in a car. I remember I told my mom I'm going to the gym. And do I like I drive by them, they look and they see that it's me, they throw their fishing rods down, they get on in their car and they start chasing me through red lights and stuff. I'm like, dude, you guys already beat my ass.
Yeah.
And then I remember I came home and I gave my mom the keys back. She's like, what happened to the gym? I'm like, don't worry about it.
Yeah,
but
again.
I literally, when I got clean, even when I would get gas, I would circle around because I didn't know who would be there because people were like, bro, if we see you, we're going to fuck you up.
Yeah. Wow. Did you ever think that someone was going to kill you?
a part of me was like, dude, I hope someone would. And at the time, I had robbed so many people that I'm like, damn, at the end of the day, 99% of people don't do anything.
Yeah.
So it's not that I was really tough, but I started to realize that most people don't want problems. True. Most people will take it on the chin. And maybe if they run into you, they probably will. But like, it wasn't that hard to find me, you know? But like, shout out to that kid. Like, dude, he planned a whole setup. They covered me in blood. Dude, I remember I went home. My mom was like, ay, Dios mío. Like, I remember her being like, holy shit, you know? And I went and got my friend picked me up. And this is like how funny like the life is. I called like my one friend that I did drugs with. I'm like, bro, come pick me up. I just got robbed. And I just got jumped. And he's like, where are you? He like comes, picks me up in the middle of nowhere. As soon as I get in the back seat, he's like, oh shit. He pulls over, parks, turns all the lights on in the car, and starts taking pictures.
Oh my God.
And he's like, dude, they got you so good. But he wasn't like concerned. Yeah. He wasn't like, go to the hospital. Yeah. He just thought it was funny that they had gotten me, you know?
Fuck, man.
So all this happens, and like, where do we go from there? Crack becomes oxys? Like, what's the...
Both. I'm dating both of them.
Okay. Damn.
So at the time, like, that's dude, Oxycontin is like the love of my life, and crack is also the love of my life. And trying to... Like, being addicted to crack and oxys is really like the two strongest drugs on the planet. You have an opiate that's literally the same as heroin, and then you have crack, which is, you know, next to crystal meth, like the most addictive upper out there. Now it's crazy. They just have so much other shit, like with fentanyl and fucking flocka, and like they're just crazy.
Taking it to the next level. Okay, so walk us through kind of where your life goes from that point. 14, 15, crack.
So at that point, like I went from being like the coolest kid in school to like the biggest scumbag. Some of my childhood friends. Do I remember I got robbed this one time? I called my childhood friend Jimmy Niffin. Shout out. Dude, this kid is just like a good kid. He tried to get me clean a couple times. He would like give me acid. He was like up on psychedelics like super early on. He's like, dude, just do these acid. I would just do acid and like smoke crack, you know?
That's crazy.
But I did acid every day for like 30 days. But he was just such a good kid and like my childhood friend. I remember I called him and I was like, bro, I just got robbed. Come pick me up. He laughed and he said, bro, you picked drugs over your friends a long time ago. And he hung up.
Damn.
And in my mind, like, we're best friends. But to him, he's probably like, dude, we don't even talk or hang out or anything. Mm. Like, that's how delusional people on drugs are. That's why, like, if you have friends on drugs that reach out to you all the time, in their mind, you guys are still best friends. Because years have passed, but to them, those years are seconds in time. Like,
yeah, it's just
like,
there, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like I have people hit me up, like, look at this kid. He keeps hitting me up for this or asking me for that. In his mind, you're the only friend they have, and they're still living mentally that you guys are best friends back then, you know?
It's trippy. Fuck.
So then I basically end up getting kicked out of school. I get kicked out of another school. I get kicked out of school like 3 or 4 times. I end up going to like this reform school, and then I have like an intervention. I go to detox, and I go to detox at 17 years old. And I'm the only adolescent who's getting Suboxone. So I'm the only kid there who's getting treated for opiate addiction. I'm the only kid there for crack addiction. No one's even heard of this. When I check in there, they're like, what? You've been smoking crack for 3 years? And they're almost like want to investigate my parents. Because when a kid comes in with shit like that, do they think that the parents are like giving the kid drugs or the parents are negligent?
Sure.
My parents walk in and like, dude, my parents are like fucking Boy Scouts, like model citizens. My dad's never got a ticket. My dad's like embarrassed, you know?
Yeah.
Dude, when I would go to court, I remember this one time I went to court and the judge was like, who's this? They're like, that's the mom. They're like, who's that? They're like, that's the dad. And the judge was like confused. And he's like, come over here. And he was like, those are your parents? I was like, yeah. And he like talked to someone else. He's like, you guys are married? They're like, yeah. Like, how long you guys been married? Like 27 years or whatever. And the judge was like, wow, we haven't had a co-parent household here in years.
Wow. Yeah. It makes me want to ask the question. Like, I was going to ask you later, but I guess kind of when you're here, like, usually, I shouldn't say usually, but from anything that I've seen, it's always like, there's some sort of trauma in your life. Like,
for sure. I remember hearing about like repressed memories. I was like, dude, someone raped me and I repressed it for sure. I remember thinking like that's because I couldn't even explain it.
That's what I'm saying. You're saying all this shit. You're saying good parents, good household, raise you well, always. Mm-hmm. And like, obviously that happens. There's cases. You're not the only one mm-hmm. in the world. But like, usually then when you look deeper, it's like there's some repressed memories. There's some sort of trauma that you went through. Like, you just can't figure it out.
So I've been clean 16 years and I've thought about this so many times, and people just find it hard to believe that there are plenty of kids that come from good families that end up drug addicts.
Yeah.
It's tough to understand. People always try to find like a why, but it's like, you know, when you get a nail in your, like I always tell, like when you get a nail in your tire, you don't go to the mechanic and be like, dude, we got to figure out where this nail came from.
Yep.
And it's like, dude, sometimes addiction will pass generations and it'll just fucking hit for no reason. Mm-hmm. You know, like maybe there wasn't that much, but looking back at my life, like I do have trauma early on that I might've even been a part of it. But a lot of times if you have addiction, I'm talking about like born addicts. Like I do believe people are born addicts. Your trauma is self-imposed mm-hmm. by the most part, because there are people that will go to war, see the exact same thing, and one person's traumatized from it and the other person isn't. Your own brain traumatizes it, because somebody might be in a cheerleader and they fall and everyone laughs at them, and this other person gets up and never thinks about it again, and this other girl thinks about it every day, and it's humiliating. It's a traumatic event in their life. So your brain ability to repeat negative situations is its own trauma. And for me, I've always had an obsessive compulsive thought process towards negative experiences. I never heard, like when I speak at meetings, a lot of times I say like my addiction was a hearing problem. I never, ever, ever would say that my dad loved me. Like I just didn't believe my dad loved me. I just never heard it. Mm-hmm. But when I got clean, I started to look back and I would think about, yeah, my dad called me a drug addict and he called me a piece of shit and he called me a loser. And when I got kicked out of school, he would scream and yell at me. But the next day he would be like, you know, I still love you, right? I never heard that.
Interesting.
You didn't remember that part, yeah.
So when I got clean, my whole hearing was so selective. Somebody would say, yo, you're so smart and brilliant and interesting. You got so much going for you. And all I would hear was someone calling me a scumbag loser. That's all you're ever going to be. Yeah. So it's like I had to learn to flip that around, because even today, dude, you get a million comments on your fucking Instagram page. You can choose which ones to listen to and which one to. Which ones do you guys look at?
Yeah. The ones that the negative ones. Yeah.
Usually you're like, dude, why did you look at that one negative one? So it's like, you know, you kind of train yourself to where it doesn't affect you that much. But there's a kid right now fucking in South Florida who's going to kill themselves over some negative comment somebody made. And someone else gets the same negative comment and they brush it off.
They laugh about it.
But it's because they have self-esteem. Mm. So it's like your self-esteem is the barrier between someone's ability to affect you.
True.
You know,
that confidence that you have in yourself.
Yeah. So it's like I never had that because I was never good at anything. Mm-hmm. When I left that one neighborhood that was near the skate park, I got bullied a lot. I was always like the butt of all the jokes. And then I had false confidence. I was pretending to be tough. I was pretending to be thugged out. I was pretending to be somebody I wasn't. I was lying and pretending to be older. You know, like it was all made up. So when you have a facade that's made up, you're so insecure, someone's gonna find out. You don't have real security, it's fake.
Yeah, you start going harder.
Yeah, bro, you know, to cover it up.
Yes.
So now you're overcompensating. So it's a illusion of confidence, but it's really false pride and ego and just bullshit. And like, honestly, like my story is of like a little kid trying to be cool. Like, people ask like, why'd you try to do drugs? The first time I tried to do drugs, I was trying to be cool.
Yeah.
Like my real addiction was trying to be cool. That's like really, really what it was.
Wow. Damn. That's very honest, bro.
That's deep, bro.
Yeah.
Straight up. When does the becoming clean start?
I go to detox and this kid, Jimmy Niffin, had been trying to tell me to read this book, and it was Scar Tissue by Anthony Kiedis. And I remember my mom was like, do you want anything? And I remember I was like, get me this book. And she brought this book. And I read it cover to cover. And no one in that detox told me I had the disease of addiction. Nobody told me I was an addict. Nobody told me that this is a common problem. It's just not that common for children and that there's a solution. No one said any of that. People were like, like people are confused. They're asking the same question. Like, who fucking raped this kid?
Yeah.
You know, that's what people think. You know?
100%.
So I read this book. And bro, this guy, Anthony Kiedis, is such a good storyteller. I read it cover to cover in like 2 days. And he talks about being clean, using, being a rock star, trying to get off drugs, shooting heroin with gang members under the bridge in LA, like all this crazy stuff of Overtown. And he talks about how the only reason why he's clean today is because he got a commitment to pick up the chairs at an AA meeting. And he talks about he's still sober today because he goes to these AA meetings. Wow. And I'm like, what the fuck is AA? Fuck. Like, what the fuck? Like, I didn't even, I told you, I Google, I'm like a fucking nerd when it comes to like figuring shit out. So I was like, dude, I've never even heard of 12-step meetings. So when I left, I told my mom, I got to go to a 12-step meeting. And my mom was like, what is that? So my mom takes me to a 12-step meeting. In South Florida, we are like the mecca of pain clinics and scams, but we also are the mecca of like recovery.
Wow.
So my first 12-step meeting, dude, there's like 20-year-olds with a year clean, 7 months clean, 2 years clean, a bunch of younger people. I was 17. I was still the youngest one there. For years, sometimes I was the youngest one there.
Mm.
But I started to see young people clean, a lot of them from New Jersey, who have been shooting heroin since they were like 13, 14. One of my closest friends, Chris, when I got clean, I thought I was like, dude, I was living my life like I was fucking Hannibal Lecter. Bro, people in my school were like, I would walk into school, they'd be like, holy shit. Bro, I used to smoke crack in class. I used to snort pills in class. There's kids who are like, the first time I ever seen coke was sitting on the bus next to you in eighth grade. Wow. Like, they're kids are probably traumatized from just being in class with me. Mm-hmm. So like, dude, I just thought that I was the worst thing on the planet. I thought that there was something wrong with me.
Mm-hmm.
Bro, my friend Chris, bro, he was like, man, my daddy shot dope. My mom shot dope. My granddaddy shot dope. Like, he comes from that. And he was like, man, when I was 13 years old, this black dude came into my house and he said, stretch out your arm and count back to 10 and close your eyes and stick out your arm.
Wow. Crazy.
And he's like, dude, he shot drugs at 13 years old. Some random dude walked into your house and shot you up at 13.
Wow. So then you're
feeling. And he had like a year clean.
Yeah.
And he was 21.
Yeah.
And if you looked at him, bro, he looked like an Abercrombie model. You wouldn't even guess this kid. This kid is like the worst drug addict on the planet. And he had a year clean. So I would hear people's stories and be like, what's my excuse?
Mm-hmm.
So that really was the beginning to thinking that it was possible, because like, if you don't see someone else do it, you just think it's impossible.
True.
You know, that's why social media is so powerful, because when you see young success, like there's so many young successful kids on Instagram.
Of course.
You can't even like, you gotta be like, fuck, what am I doing wrong?
Yeah.
You know, you're like, dude, this kid's, oh, I'm 19 years old. I invented fucking crypto coin and fucking, I'm a billionaire. You know, it's like every post, like every 20-year-old kid has a Huracan in Miami.
Yeah.
So crazy. It can either piss you off or it can inspire some of that's fake, but it's like, it inspires you to be like, damn, this fucking idiot kid. And some of them have real pictures. Like, you guys interviewed Alex, the trader, right?
Yeah.
This kid has a real picture of him working at Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah.
Like, that's not fake, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, when you see that somebody has done something near your age group, your demographic, mm-hmm. and they have proof in your face, and then you meet them and you're like, wow, they're real.
Yeah.
You know?
What's your excuse?
Yeah, I was like, dude, what's my excuse? Then I had this thought of like, man, I wanted to do drugs because I was just a crazy kid. It was so crazy. But then I was like, how crazy would it be if I got clean? Wouldn't that be wouldn't that be crazy? Like, what if I just didn't even drink?
Yeah.
I was like, I never met someone that doesn't drink. Even my parents drink. Like, what if I got clean at 17? It started to be like funny to me. Like, that would be kind of crazy. Imagine I go 17 and I'm 21. I have like 4 years clean. Like, that would be crazy.
True.
And then I was like, man, that's pretty wild. Like, what if? And then I was like, dude, I probably would be successful.
So it was just like, it was like one extreme to the other.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm so fucked up. And then all of a sudden you're like, what if I was just like an angel, like on the opposite on the opposite side.
What
of
if
it.
I like became a good person? You know? Not like help people, like old ladies cross
the
street.
That was probably like the first time that came in your mind.
I didn't even think that that was cool. I would be like, you're a nerd, you're whatever. Bro, I've been to meetings with people with face tattoos who have done 20 years in prison talking about how the best high they got is coming home after a hard long day at a regular job and fucking their kids come up to them and they hug them and they watch Finding Nemo with them. Yeah. And I'm like, dude, that's gangster. I remember this guy, dude, he did years in prison, sold heroin in prison, never thought he was going to change, part of a gang. And he was like, man, the most gangster shit I ever did was pay my bills and feed my family, you know, because he's like, dude, when I was making all that money, I wasn't a dad. So I started to see like my whole life, I was trying to be the man instead of a man. Mm. And I realized like I was childish my whole life. I was trying to be an adult, but I was really a scared little boy. And that's every, dude, I go speak at prisons and I'll tell people that. Like every motherfucker in here is scared little boy. Mm. You're all soft.
Damn.
Bro, when you go to prison, you say it to them, they get so mad. But they get it because it's like sometimes at the end of the meeting, you'll be like, who wants to say something? And no one ever wants to say something. Yeah. And I remember I had this guy speak for me and he stood up and he's like, all y'all motherfuckers scared to say something, all y'all pussy. Mm. And people were like, oh my God, you know? Mm. But it's like, you know, I know that the toughest exterior in nature is because they got the gooeyest center. Mm-hmm. Mm. So it's like when you meet men that have real tough exterior, they have to be like that because there's something really soft on the inside. Mm. So it's like I could be vulnerable and I know that like I ain't gonna feel no different type of way or whatever. And that took years to get to.
So holy fuck, you just spit so many bars. I have so many things. Okay.
Well, I think it's like choosing a heart. I just want to say it's like doing drugs every day is fucking hard. But being a real man is also hard.
Yeah, bro. It's
so
like,
you gotta choose your heart, right?
Because sometimes people are like, yo, being a drug addict's easy because the easy way out, like, you know, staying clean's hard. But it's like
waking up every day as an addict is hard, man.
It's like it's the same thing inverted.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's like you're hustling to make the money to get. It's like if you just did that the right way, you'd be.
When I watch crackheads outside, people might be like, "Oh, they're crackheads." To me, I'm like, "Dude, that dude could be a CEO one day."
Yeah.
You know, because it's like, dude, if you knew how much time and effort they spent on this one craft, that's why a lot of addicts become successful because we have OCD because we don't know how to go home.
True.
When I was at the party, I didn't know how to go home. People would be like, yo, go home. I'd be like, no, I'm going to the
next.
People
party,
would be like, bro, are you still up from yesterday? I just didn't know how to stop. Mm. So when I work on my business, I get OCD about my business. I get OCD about things that I care about. And it could be unhealthy, bro. I mean, overworking has been glamorized in social media for like the last 10 years like crazy, but sometimes you really have to overwork for 5 years to get to a point where you can even introduce balance. Getting clean is the same way.
Okay,
you gotta overdo it for 5 years. You gotta go to meetings every single day, you gotta devour 12-step literature, you gotta really 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 overdo it for 5 years. This could be the only thing you think about. Then maybe you start thinking about how to make money. Then you start to think about how to have a girlfriend or something like that. Because if you try to do it a little bit, bro, a little bit ain't ever gonna, you know, swing that door.
Is that how you did it?
Dude, I was obsessed with, like you're talking about, like, dude, I became so obsessed with recovery. I wanted to know how 12-step meetings started. I wanted to know about how AA started. I was reading all the literature. I started listening to all the OG speakers, people with like 50 years clean. I was like, dude, this guy Steve gave me this data disc of all these speaker tapes of like all the OG recovering addicts. And dude, there was women on there, men on there that blew my mind, changed my life forever. People who dedicated their whole life to helping addicts. So it's like, I really, really got to like having a respect for the 12-step program. Because at first I'm like, oh, meetings. I never thought meetings were cool or like interesting. But when you really learn the history about it, I was like, damn, this shit is crazy.
Yeah.
So like, I engulfed myself in that. It's just like in the gym. Dude, there's people at the gym where I've seen for years at the same gym. They look the same.
Yeah.
And it's not because they're not going to the gym, because they're at the gym. Yeah. They're just always a little bit too short, too late. Mm-hmm. You're just eating that one little meal that's not making the effort.
Going through the motions.
You're not doing enough to bridge the gap.
True. Yeah.
You got to close the gap. Because, and people think that it's like, oh, well, my genetics or whatever. I don't give a fuck what it is.
Yeah.
99% of the time, it's lack of effort.
It's facts.
Effort and discipline is the key to not having significant change or lasting change. So a lot of times people get clean and they have change, but it's not significant and it's definitely not lasting.
Yeah.
Same thing with the gym. Bro, you can change a little bit, but is it going to be significant? Maybe not. Mm. Is it going to last? Definitely not.
Yeah.
So you get clean. So you get clean at 18?
Was that 17?
17. You've been clean junior ever since?
Ever since. I just celebrated 16 years. I'm 33 years old. I've never had a drop of alcohol.
Wow. Congratulations, bro. That's shit. Fucking... Yeah. See, that's fucking intense, bro. That is like extreme.
See the wow we said? Yeah. that was a bigger wow than you're telling us about the drugs, you know? So it's like... It's more impressive.
I've never had a drop of alcohol. When I turned 21, I was living my dream life. Mm-hmm. Dude, I was 21 years old. I was celebrating... I'm horrible at math. I was celebrating 4 years clean. And I was dating a girl who was... I was 19.
So 2 years?
No. I was...
21?
Yeah, I was 19 celebrating 5 years.
Okay.
So I was dating this girl for like a year and a half. I met her when I was 19. She was like 27. So I'm mature for my age. My friends are... Like when I was like 19, my friends were like 30-year-old tatted ex-gang member prison, like ex-prison convicts, you know, because I go to these meetings and I'm meeting all these crazy people, right? So at 21 years old, I'm dating this girl who, in my opinion, is like way out of my league. Like, I can't even believe this girl even talks to me, you know? Bro, I'm 21 years old. She was probably 29 at the time, you know? Wow. She's like 7, 8 years older than me. And for my 21st birthday, she surprises me for a trip to Naples. Dude, I'm like madly in love with this girl. I've never been in love in my whole life. I was like super in love with this girl. She plans a trip to Naples for the whole 5 nights there. She books a 12-step meeting every night for us to go to. We're going kayaking, bike riding, whatever. On my 21st birthday, I remember she said, okay, it's your birthday. So she like puts lingerie on and she goes in the bathroom. She's getting ready and I'm laying in the hotel bathroom. I got like the slippers on. I got the robe on. At the time, I'm making $12 an hour, sweeping cigarette butts up, driving clients at a treatment center. I still live at my parents' house, but I'm in college, right? I'm clean 5 years. I'm turning 21. And I remember I closed my eyes and my girl's like, close your eyes. I remember I closed my eyes. I was like, man, thank God I'm clean.
Yeah.
It's just like, to me, like, I couldn't believe it. Like room service in a nice hotel. Bro, I used to smoke crack at the fucking Days Inn with blood all over the fucking bed from people shooting up and stuff at 14 years old. Wow. So it's like at 5 years clean, bro, I was dead broke. I had never had a comma in my bank account, but I was clean for 5 years. I was helping people. I had commitments where I was bringing in meetings to jails and institutions. And I'm in a healthy relationship. And fucking about to get laid.
Life's good.
Yeah, I'm blessed.
Yeah.
Wow. And still to this day, not a drop of alcohol. Weed, smoke weed?
No.
Nothing.
Definitely not.
Completely.
No kratom. I don't do fucking CBD. Wow. Like, dude, I won't even do like a CBD balm. I've been to like a massage therapist. Like, we're gonna do this. I'm like, fuck.
So bummer.
I won't even do like the CBD balm cream.
Yeah.
And not that I think I'm gonna relapse. I'm just like a fucking, I'm an over the top person. I like to kill a mosquito with a sledgehammer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm fucking not fucking with that shit. I don't eat tiramisu. You know, I don't eat penne alla vodka.
True.
Like, I know it cooks out, right? That's just how serious I am about being clean. And people might think it's a joke. I know people in recovery who do eat stuff with alcohol cooked in it because the alcohol gets cooked out. I don't know. I just been like
that. Now you're addicted to being sober.
But also you've like, I feel like it's like something where it's like, yo, I've come so far. I put so much time, effort, energy, money into this. Like, so even the slightest, I guess, in your, like for you, it's like I'm, penny on the vodka, like it's a step back. Like, what's the point?
there's other shit on the menu. Yeah, yes. You know what I mean? So it's like to me, it's like I always say, it's like, bro, let's say like your favorite artist was playing at fucking three clubs. Mm. And it's like one of them was a gay club. Like, bro, if you went to that one gay club, like, why would you go to that one if you're not gay? You know what I mean? So it's kind of like, it's kind of like if you went, you wouldn't be gay.
Yeah.
That doesn't make you gay. Yeah. But it would be like, bro, why would you go to that one?
Just go to the other
one. You know
what
I mean? Yeah. So like to me, it's like, that's how serious it is to me. It's like, bro, I'm not, because I've had friends call me and be like, because you know what? A lot of times that's how that shit starts.
Yeah.
It's like, bro, I've had friends who are like, yo, can I fucking smoke this CBD pen? Yeah. I'm like, why would you? Yeah. I don't know. I don't smoke CBD pens.
Yeah.
You want to shoot up water? You know, like, oh, can I have, like, bro, there's non-alcoholic fucking like 0.1% fucking alcohol drinks. Yeah. I don't drink that shit.
Yeah.
You know, like, if you're straight, you don't do like sus stuff.
You know? You don't paint your nails, bro.
It's like, maybe, you know, but it's like, and it's like, that's kind of like a joke, but it's like, yeah. Dude, there's things that I'm comfortable with. I'm comfortable having gay friends. Mm-hmm. I'm totally comfortable having gay friends. I would let a gay person sleep at my house. Mm-hmm. Would I sleep in the same bed as a gay person?
Yeah.
I probably wouldn't. Yeah. Especially if there's a couch downstairs.
There you go.
So it's like, bro, if you slept in the same bed with somebody who's gay when there was a couch. So to me, it's almost the same thing. And I'm extreme. I'm super extreme with my recovery. Not everybody is going to live their life super extreme like me. Mm-hmm. And it's like, bro, I have plenty of friends who do shit that, like, dude, in my opinion, I would never do. Mm. But I definitely do shit they would never do too.
Sure.
So it's like, there's this one guy who used to say, like, what keeps me clean might get you high.
True.
Damn. True.
Yeah.
Different people, different circumstances, yeah. Different values, different tolerances.
For just sure. Different paths
from
too.
Human to human, it can change so quickly.
I want to
say basically you have recovery centers now.
Yeah,
that's sick.
So how do you obviously you know the world you know that world so well. Mm-hmm. Clearly. Mm-hmm. How do you get involved now on the business side? Like how does it transition to that?
So I had a motorcycle company with my friend, and I just always like to tell people, because so many kids ask me like how to make money. And it's like, bro, you're not even clean yet. Or you're clean a couple of months. That shit should come. You got to build a foundation, bro.
Yeah.
If you're focused on money now, the recovery that you do have ain't even going to last.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about money till I had 5 years clean. I had friends working at these call centers making $2,000 a week. Dude, at 19 years old, $2,000 a week looked like the lottery.
Yeah. Yeah.
What would you even spend that on? I was like, what human would even want? Like, what? $2,000 every week?
Yeah.
Bro, the only time I ever got $2,000 was when like my FAFSA came in for like school and like it was gone like in 3 days. And that was like $1,800. It was like so much money. I couldn't even wrap my head around it. And they would tell me, like, bro, you'd probably be good on the phones. And I would be like, no, dude, I know myself. Cause I'm an ego person. I know that I'd probably think I was like fucking God or some shit. Like it would not be healthy for me my first couple years clean. At 5 years clean, I meet somebody and dude, he's 21 years old. He's not in recovery and he's a multimillionaire. And I remember thinking like, it's gotta be his parents. Like someone gave him this business or whatever. But dude, before I'm hanging out with him, like, dude, this motherfucker just works. Mm. Fucking 8 days a week. He doesn't sleep. He doesn't drink. I've never met a non-addict that the kid didn't even drink.
Yeah.
All he did was hang out with his family and work 24/7. He would go 12 hours without eating. I was super into like fitness at the time. So like, bro, we have to eat. Like, this is crazy. He like wouldn't eat. He would just be so obsessed with working. And bro, he really taught me like meticulous OCD. You do things the right way. You measure twice, you cut once, fucking perfection to the nines in everything we do. Mm. From the way we buy the bikes, the way we part them out, the way that we list them, to the description, to the pictures. Everything we're going to do is going to be super perfect. Everything's going to be like data driven. So we're going to put every single motorcycle we buy, we're going to put how much we bought it for, how much the fuel cost, how much the frame was sold for, how long it took to sell. Wow. So we had everything, like, because just because you make a lot of profit on a bike doesn't mean it's a good bike to buy, because it might have taken 6 months to sell 70% of the parts. Bro, he had shelves stacked 20 feet tall in giant warehouses like a library. Subframes were on A, you know, swing arms were on B. Like it was, and then they had people on a radio where when a part would sell, they would radio the parts, and then the parts from the day before would get printed out with the label. And then they had like a, it was a machine. Mm-hmm. I was like, bro, I would go to other people's shops to buy their bikes. They're like, yo, where's the fucking thing for the, like, bro, they're just, it's just a fucking, bro, they wake up at noon.
Yeah.
They think it's cool that they're selling bikes, but they're not like
real
driven to science. We're talking about fucking, you know, systemized business, you know? And that's when I was like, that's why this motherfucker's rich. And that's when I started getting interested with like money.
Okay.
And that's when I was like, people who make money aren't even smart. Most of them just hire smart people, but they just have fucking the balls, and they just have like the tenacity
to do it.
This crazy perseverance and idiotic belief in themselves that they could do it. We would talk to people that have been owning bike shops for years, and they would tell him something. He'd be like, you guys are retarded.
Yeah.
And my friend was 21 at the time, and they were probably like 45 years old, wow, been doing this for years. And my friend would be like, you guys are idiots. And that's when I got interested in business. And then I wanted to leave and open a treatment center, because there was a time in South Florida where if you went to a treatment center, you got treatment. It's just what else could you get?
Yeah. Yeah.
But then there was like all this crime and shady shit that was going on in South Florida, where like the Mecca for it, where I would probably say 9 out of 10 treatment centers start to become scams.
Okay.
So they were doing false marketing, paying clients, giving people drugs. Imagine you're getting paid to go to treatment. What are you going to do with that money when you get out? You're going to go and do more drugs. Then the guy who's brokering you is going to send you to another treatment center. Then they're going to buy you insurance. Then they're like, dude, there's a guy who was pimping out his own clients on fucking Backpage. Like, holy insane, fuck, insane shit. And like, to me, it's like, bro, addicts are like my family. Mm. So this is like going on in my backyard, all this fraud and bullshit. And there was a time where if you owned a treatment center, you were a good dude. You had 30 plus years sober, clean. You had other businesses. You were a businessman. And then you decided to open a treatment center. But there was kids with like 6 months clean, 19 years old, got their grandma to give them like 90 grand. And they would go open like a flop IOP and then just bill everyone's insurance, not even treat them or send them to group or anything like that.
Wow.
And then you would think like, dude, these guys are going out of business. Bro, 2 years later, they have like 7 facilities.
Oh my God. Yeah,
and making the kids running it don't even like go to meetings. They're not in recovery. They're probably smoking weed. And like, bro, I would say 99% of these characters have ended up going to jail. So that's when I started to think, like, I started to get inspired by them. Cause I'm like, bro, this idiot who isn't even in the recovery community, who doesn't even care, who couldn't even fucking, I wouldn't even hire to clean my house, could open a drug rehab and be successful. I know I could do it.
For sure. So that's kind of your motivation.
So that's when I started to think that that's where it begins, to think you got to be inspired to think that you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I told my business partner, like, dude, I'm going to find an investor. And then I found an investor who was kind of interested. And then he said he kind of would do it. But I told my business partner I found someone. So he would be like, oh, no, do it with me. So then he got interested. And then he sold his business. And then we opened the treatment center. And then we ran out of money. And then we went back to the first investor. And he invested.
Okay.
And then that's now all three of us have owned the treatment centers.
Wow. How many do you have to this day?
So I had left the treatment center. I've left the treatment centers like a year ago.
Okay.
But they still operate. They have like 4 locations.
Okay. Any reason for leaving?
Dude, I was doing the adult stuff, and like, honestly, like, I had like this mental shift. So like, I was so invested in my business, cause like, that's just all I knew. So I was there every single day. And to me, like, if you're an owner and you're not there every day, I would think you're like,
yep,
not a real owner.
Mm-hmm.
Like a real, dude, I was running groups.
You gotta be around. Yeah. You gotta be around.
Bro, I brought in a meeting to my treatment center every single week for years. Without it, like, never missed, you know? I was there. I knew everyone's clients by their first name. But then, bro, you have multiple locations. You can't be in different states at the same time. But I was still really, you know, invested in my business. I was getting calls. And I'm like, dude, open a treatment center, doing all levels of care is no joke. There was a time where I was getting like 300 emails, 200 phone calls, not 200, maybe 60 phone calls a day, and maybe like 70, 80 text messages within group chats a day. Mm-hmm. 60 phone calls a day. It was just nonstop.
Losing your mind. Your it's not, right also there. Not sustainable.
Exactly. Losing your mind. But at the time, I think like this is what an entrepreneur is, you know? And I do have like a lot of mentors. And I remember I was at my mentor's house and he had like 12 facilities. And I'm hanging out with him. My phone's going crazy. I'm on the call, whatever. I'm hanging out with him. Dude, he's just putting laundry away and he fucking puts on anime. And he's just sitting at the couch. And dude, his phone's not ringing at all.
Yeah.
And he was telling me, he's like, bro, my employees don't even have my phone number. Damn. I was like, what? And then you know what he told me? He said, if your business doesn't operate without you, you're not a business owner.
Yep.
You're a high paid employee with equity.
Facts.
And damn. Then I was like, bro, my business. And I used to brag like, oh, if I left, this place would fall apart. So then
the opposite.
I was like, yeah, my buddy was like, that's not good. Yeah. Who would buy your business if it wouldn't work without you, you know? And then I had another mental shift. I remember I stole this employee, not steal, but like I hired someone from a competitor who I always thought they were like, till today, I still think they're like the best treatment center in the nation. They have probably like 500 beds. Mm-hmm. And the guy who owns it, good dude, great reputation, did things the right way, still does all these things. And I never met him or had a conversation with him ever. He's super humble. He's got like 2 followers on social media. You know, just like you would never believe this guy's probably making $2 million a week, you know?
Wow.
And dude, I remember I hired one of his top employees and I was like, dude, you got to tell me about him. She was like, what do you mean? I was like, what's he like? She's like, oh, he's cool. I was like, what is he going crazy? He must be like losing his mind because I have like 200 beds, 180 employees, and I'm like losing my mind. And she looked at me and was like, no. She goes, I think he's just having fun. I was like, fun? What's that? Dude, in my mind, like being successful isn't fun. This is gonna be grind, fucking bust your. And I was like, he's having fun?
Yeah.
Crazy.
And that's when I was like, wow, I've been doing this all wrong.
Okay.
So I started to implement systems where I didn't need to be involved.
Yeah.
And when I left to go do like adult entertainment, like I just knew like it wouldn't mesh. And like I took a buyout. Yeah. And like I didn't get what I, and it's like, dude, like no matter how much money you get, you just always want more. Mm-hmm. But like I didn't get like what I imagined I would get, but I still did like pretty well, you know? Uh-huh. So like, I got bought out of that company, but I still have like so much love and admiration for like the company, you know?
Sure, of course. Well, you were part of building it. Okay, so you leave to go to adult, like you leave to go join that world.
Yeah.
Why, how, like you walk us through that? Because I'm sure people are also, because we've had porn stars, we've interviewed porn stars and OnlyFans girls and stuff, and I'm always intrigued on how they get involved. OnlyFans is like a different story because you just. Yeah.
But I think even for women and men, it's different too.
That too. Yeah, that too.
So I told you I was dating this girl. I was like 19. So we had broken up like shortly after that. Like I dated her for like almost like 3 years, I think. And like 21, I'm single. And at 21, I had 5 years clean. And dude, my first 5 years clean didn't go to strip clubs. Like, I might have like had sex with girls, but like I wasn't like super promiscuous. I was really ashamed about being promiscuous because I had learned about it. Mm-hmm. And I had learned that like, bro, when women are promiscuous as teenagers, dude, there's something wrong with them.
True.
When a girl is fucking sucked off half the school in seventh grade, like that's something wrong with that bitch.
I agree with that. Yeah.
But at the same time, I started to realize like, bro, if a dude is in seventh grade, and he's fucking got head from half the girls in school, something's wrong with him.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, in eighth grade, I had already experienced prostitution, you know? So it's like, there's something wrong with a kid at 14 who's paying for pussy, you know? So it's like, I started to realize that like, my sexual promiscuity, whatever you want, however you want to say it, being promiscuous at a young age was unhealthy and probably due to lack of self. Because when a girl does that at a young age, it's lack of self-esteem. She doesn't have a father figure in her life. No one tells her she's beautiful. She seeks attention. But it's the same thing for a dude. Dude, I don't have a lot of self-esteem. I wanted everybody to think I was hooking up with everybody so that way other guys could be like, oh, you're cool. Like, what? I would hook up with ugly girls because I thought that, like, that meant you were, like, that savage.
Yeah.
You know? I just grew up thinking that. Yeah. Like, oh, dude, I'll smash, you know, whatever. Yeah. You know? I just thought that was cool.
Yeah.
And, dude, as I got older, I started to educate myself and go to therapy. And I had, like, dude, I did, like, six months of treatment. And, you know, I started reading a lot about, like, self-development and stuff like that. I started to think, like, damn, like, this isn't all healthy. So I had to learn how to, like, stop acting like that. And then I had to learn how to, like, really respect women. I didn't know how to have any type of relationships with women. And at 5 years clean, you know, I wasn't a kid anymore. I was 21. And I had a friend who was a gigolo. And, dude, my friend could not stay clean. And I remember he was a gigolo working for a male escort agency. And I remember him struggling staying clean. And I remember telling him, like, bro, you can't be clean and do all this unspiritual stuff. Like, yeah. Being a gigolo is unspiritual, bro. I don't know.
Yeah, facts.
You know? Yeah. It's just like, bro, it's like borderline illegal.
Yeah.
And it's like, dude, you're getting paid to have sex. Like, whatever. He ends up staying clean and still a gigolo, right? Months go by. He's doing good. He calls me. He's like, bro, I need you. I'm single now. I'm starting to, like, wild out a little bit. I'm going to strip clubs, whatever. I'm hooking up with different girls. And he's like, I need your help. And I was like, dude, what? And he was like, dude, there's this girl in Miami. I need you to fuck. And I remember being like, no, dude, I'm not smashing an old lady.
Yeah.
And he was like, who said she was old?
Yeah.
And I was like, they got to all be old and disgusting. He sends me a picture of her, and it's like this pretty black girl. And I was like, no way. Like, well, is it a dude? Like, what is it? And he's like, no, dude, she has a sugar daddy. He's going to pay you. He's not going to be in the room. He'll open the door. He'll leave. And when you're done, he'll pay you. And I remember being like, how much? And I think it was like $2,000 or like $1,800 or it was a lot of money. Wow. Dude, I was in there for like 30 minutes. And I remember just being like, that didn't feel unspiritual at all.
And then it starts.
It felt like, dude, it felt transactional. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like hardcore. It was like, bro, when I got there, it was crazy. She had a book that you have to read before you go into the room.
Okay.
And the book said, like, welcome to the playhouse. These are the playhouse rules. And it was like, don't call me a bitch. Don't slap me. I'm a queen. You're going to treat me as such. You know, don't be rough with me. I like it slow. Like,
so she basically just said, like, make love to me.
Yeah.
And she's blindfolded.
The whole time?
The whole time. And it's even more transactional. You know, I probably slept with this girl like 70 times over.
She'd never
years.
Seen you.
Never. I went out to dinner with her randomly, like a whole bunch of people. She didn't even know that I probably.
Oh my God.
It's crazy. So that's how it kind of started.
Holy shit. Yo, shit really goes down in Miami.
Florida is wild.
Holy fuck.
Florida's wild. So, dude, now I'm doing this, not regularly, but a couple. Now I'm doing it like other. And I told, like, dude, I'm not doing no, like, old, ugly ladies, you know? And I would do, like, pretty, and it would usually not be like a cuck scenario, but it would be like a sugar daddy or a husband that does this as like a gift to their wife, which is kind of crazy to think about.
Wow.
But she probably lets him do whatever.
True.
So it's probably a scenario where, like, the husband probably smashes so many girls, and every once in a while, so it's controlled, the husband will be like, I'll hire this guy. You can smash. I don't want to be here.
You gotta be blindfolded.
And then whatever.
Yeah,
whatever their situation is.
Yeah, but it's kind of like, and I'm like, that's even healthier than cheating. Like,
this is kind of,
you know, dude, and sometimes, bro, like sometimes, I remember this one time, this dude was like, I was still like 21, 22 or something. I remember this guy was like, probably like 40, but his wife was like super fit and pretty. And I remember he was like, man, when I see a young guy like you get, like, all hopped up for my wife, like, it makes me really think, like, I have something really special.
Fuck.
I remember being like, whatever, bro. Like,
I don't even know. I don't even know how to respond.
Like,
to that.
Thank you, bro.
Yeah.
Because you think that they're gonna be mad at you or whatever, and then it's like, around like that same time, I went to like a swingers party, and I went to like a swingers club, and I just started to see people have open relationships that were, people think open relationships are like a free for all. It's open, you can do whatever. And in actuality, an open relationship has more boundaries than a closed one. True. Because in a closed one, it's you can't sleep with people, I can't sleep with people, you can't kiss people, like you can't touch other people. In an open one, it's like, okay, no kissing, and I don't want you to text them, but you can sleep with them if I'm there. But if they do this, I don't want you to do that. And then sometimes there's stuff that you don't know how you're going to feel until after the fact.
True.
And then you're like, hey, you know what? When you did that, that actually did bother me. Because sometimes in your mind, a fantasy is better than when in real life. It will make you insecure or hurt your ego. And it's kind of like you're doing this together with your partner. So I got introduced to that world. And I never was in, like, I was in open relationships, but I never wanted to see my girl get like blown out by somebody. Like it was always like, hey, I'm gonna do my thing, you go do your thing, and like whatever. But like since then, I was only in open relationships. And then it's like, bro, I would get phone calls with like someone be like, bro, I need you at this. There's like a swingers hotel in Hollywood, and they'd be like, bro, I need you here. I'd be like, what is it? And he'd be like, bro, it's this hotel party, it's like 20 girls, and there's only gonna be 4 guys.
Oh my god.
I'd be like, let's go. You know? And it would be stuff that you would see like in, like you would, I didn't even think stuff like this happened in America.
Yeah.
Some of these women would have like full-fledged boyfriends or husbands or whatever. It's like that fetish, like people think porn stars are crazy. There's nobody crazier than the people in the fetish community, because these people have regular jobs. They're not doing this for money. They're doing this off camera.
Solely for pleasure.
Solely for pleasure. Mm. Bro, there's some women that I've seen that you would look at their Instagram and just be like, there's no way that's the same person.
Yeah.
Because it's like, this girl is so off the chain.
Yeah. Do you think like it's like demonic though? Do you think it's like No, not at all.
No. Okay. No, not at all. Because it's like, we have a lot of shame about sex. And they are things that are like predatory, boundary crossing, unconsensual, grooming. These are things that happen.
Sure.
And a lot of it happened not in that world.
Mm-hmm.
They happen in the other world.
That's a fair point.
You don't hear about, when you hear about a porn star being sexually assaulted or raped or they commit suicide, it is vastly smaller numbers than what happens in church, what happens in the finance world, what happens in like areas where sex isn't talked about at all.
True.
So if anything, I think that the stricter and less communicative sex is where there's actually more boundary crossing.
Interesting. Yeah, because I was gonna try to like sort of tie it into like religion in that world. And obviously they say like, you know, you get married, you have one partner the rest of your life. Da, da, da,
so da. I think there's something extremely commendable about that.
Okay.
So for years, I always thought that I'm just not that type of guy. I'm not a one man, one woman for the rest of my life type of guy. It just doesn't feel natural to me.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm in a relationship and someone says, I don't want you to be with anyone else, I start to feel super constricted.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, it's not natural. It feels weird to me.
Yeah.
Almost as if like if somebody was gay, a girl just doesn't feel normal to them. It just feels weird to them.
Sure.
So like to me, I started to realize like I'm that type of person. And I thought there was something wrong. Bro, I went to therapy over it.
Yeah.
When I had 10 years clean, I went to therapy to a sexologist. Dude, this guy was $200 an hour. And I was like, I need to kill a fly with a hammer. So I'm like, I need to know. Because I felt the same way. Bro, I'm this spiritual dude. I help all these people. I have these drug rehabs. I'm helping kids with cancer. And then on the weekends, I'm fucking going to orgies, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, bro, what's wrong with me?
Uh-huh.
And my friends are like, bro, get married. You know, my friends are like, dude, you're getting old. Get married and have kids. Uh-huh. And I'm like, dude, I'm at Tootsie's every night. And it's like, bro, I would go to Tootsie's and I go to church. Like, I love church. I'm like close friends with my pastor.
Yeah.
And it's like, dude, a part of me and like in recovery, having a double life is really frowned upon. It's like almost like you're gonna relapse if you're having a double life. So my sponsor knew about it and my friends knew about it. But like, even at work, I have some employees who like just see me as like the quiet, nice guy. They never thought that I would be like sleeping with all these women. So I remember I go and see like the sexologist and I tell him all these things and I'll never forget. And he said like, your sponsor knows? I was like, yeah. He's like, your family knows? I said, yeah. He's like, your close friends know? I said, yeah. And he's like, so it seems like everyone who needs to know knows. And maybe it's not a double life, but for anyone who doesn't know, maybe it's just none of their fucking business. Mm. And then he said, it would be inappropriate to even tell some people.
Okay.
Why would you even tell your employees? You think your employees is telling you their fucking browser history?
Yeah.
Get the fuck out of here. You think you're the only one who fucking likes to do freaky shit on the weekends?
Yeah.
He was like, it would be inappropriate for you to go around and tell people that. And he was like, bro, if the people that love you the most and care about you the most know, I don't think anybody else needs to know. And then he was like, are you having sex with consensual adults? I said, yeah. He's like, are you using protection? I said, yeah. And he's like, do you get randomly tested? I said, yeah. And he's like, I think you're living the dream.
Okay, but then let me ask you this, because you say like you go to church, whatever. Obviously, they preach like stay with one woman, blah, 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 all that stuff. And you say it's commendable, somebody who's able to be with one partner. What if someone, because I've had this debate and I'm curious to hear your opinion on it, is like, oh, you know, someone could say the same thing. Let's say I'm arguing in your favor to say, it doesn't feel natural. Like, it feels natural for me to want to sleep with more than one person. I could still love my partner, blah, 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 whatever. And a good argument that I got back was, yeah, listen, like a lot of things are temptations in life, but sometimes you need to suppress. Not every natural feeling is a good one.
For sure.
For example, he goes, there's murderers who, like, killing is natural to them, but doesn't mean they should do it.
No, so there's discipline, 1,000%,
you know?
And denying temptation. And just because I'm someone who would have open relationships, that doesn't mean I would sleep with anybody and everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I have said no way more than I've said yes. I'm not just going to sleep with somebody. If I feel like a girl's toxic or there's going to be drama or there's going to be something that doesn't line up with my spiritual values, there's times where I've had transactional sex and it felt way more spiritual than some girl that I was dating that was crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. You know? Because there's always some type of transaction, whether it's spiritual, whether it's verbal.
Everything.
But
yeah.
I'm a big four agreements guy.
Okay.
And I truly believe that we have the biggest confrontation within ourselves when our words aren't matching our actions. When I tell my wife I'm going to be faithful and I'm not, that's when I have a problem. When I'm dating a girl, I'm not telling her that I'm dating other girls. That's when there's conflict. The word sin means to go against self. So if I'm doing something that I wouldn't want done to me, or I'm doing something that I don't believe in, that's when I have conflict and contradiction, when the audio doesn't match the video. But if I'm doing something that I can accept the consequences, I've communicated, I also understand that you understand the agreement. Because when I was younger, I would make an agreement with a girl knowing that they don't really want this and then do it anyways. And then they would get mad and be like, well, I told the bitch that fucking it was an open relationship.
Yeah, at least I told her.
But
yeah.
I knew that she wants more.
Yeah.
And I've done that. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been in relationships where I told the girl, hey, look, we ain't never going to be nothing serious. And then fucking I knew the girl wanted something serious. And then I was like, sorry. And I feel bad about it. But at the time I'd be like, well, you know, I told her. And honestly, when I told my therapist that I feel bad about that, he was like, does the girl have a learning disability? I said, no. And he's like, is she slow? Mm-hmm. I was like, no. He's like, did you say it in English? I said, yeah. He's like, did you say it multiple times? I said, yeah. And he's like, sounds like her problem.
Yeah.
And no, dude, fair. You can find a therapist to co-sign anything.
Sure.
So I'm not saying that just because my therapist co-signed this behavior that it's right.
Mm-hmm.
All I'm saying is that I've lived this way with success and I have a lot of love and peace in my life and I'm not breaking laws and I'm not doing anything that I can't live with the consequences for, and I'm not breaking any agreements with anybody.
Yeah. Fair.
Do you think you'd have any regrets like in the future from doing the adult stuff?
No.
Like, do you want kids?
I mean, up until recently, no. Up until recently.
Yes or no? Is it no now?
It's yes now.
Oh, it's yes now. So up until recently.
Yeah. Yes. So, you know, like a couple for years, like, dude, I went to therapy and I was like, dude, why don't I want kids? Mm-hmm. Like, I just look at kids. I'm like, dude, I don't want them. And Jordan Peterson has like this amazing thing that he talks about how like people who don't want a family or kids are like Peter Pan that never grew up, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, dude, maybe because like my child, like I never had a childhood. So it's like, dude, like, am I just like stuck in this childish way because I just can't grow up?
Yeah.
And he was just like telling me that like, dude, there's plenty of people in the world that that's not their goal in life, that their goal or finances or whatever. And it's like, it's very hard to have it all. So like a lot of times, dude, if you're super successful, you're going to lack at being a family man. If you're a super fan, I know amazing men, great fathers, great husbands, don't make a lot of money.
Yeah, it's facts.
And it's like, dude, you want to be super fit, super rich, and a family? He's like, dude, it's tough.
Yeah.
He's like, dude, you just want it all. And he was just like, I remember my therapist told me, like, dude, you look like somebody who gets what he wants. Mm-hmm. And if you really wanted it, you would have it. And instead of like wondering why you don't want it, just know like you don't want it right now. Mm-hmm. But I am open to it. So I'm not closed-minded to it. But now that I get older, dude, I've been in the strip club and seen the 40-year-olds in the strip club.
Yeah.
And dude, I've seen the dude in the strip club who cheats on his wife, who takes his ring off before he goes inside. I've seen the dude that fucking has two phones and his girl's got the location of one of them and he fucking keeps it in the fucking restaurant. You know, so like I've seen what cheating looks like. And bro, I never, like, you could say one thing about like, I don't like cheat. I have cheated before and it's like, I hate it. I just hate lying to people. You know, I just don't want to hurt people. So it's like being in an open relationship felt like I get like best of both worlds. I'm not lying. I get to sleep with people and I have like some type of relationship. I get like some intimacy, but people would say like, am I scared of intimacy? But it wasn't until recently where I've met somebody that I instantly didn't want to be with anybody else. Mm-hmm. I like fell in love with this girl, like way more hardcore than like when I was 19. Cause I'm like older now, you know,
okay.
Didn't want to be with anybody else and like saw family and marriage with her. I've never thought, I thought I was getting cancer.
Dude, you were sick, eh?
Dude, I was like, what is this? I was like checking my pulse. I'm like, what am I feeling? Bro, I've slept with 2,000 people. I've never once even had this thought ever in my mind.
Okay.
And I remember I was with this girl and just like, I remember thinking like it would just go away. Like this is just, you know, like you get fire pussy one night, you're just like tell her you want to marry her, you know? So my mind, like, is just going to go away. It's like, whatever. And like, it didn't go away. I was like obsessed.
Okay.
And it wasn't until that moment where I was like, damn, maybe monogamy and marriage and a family would be cool. And when I see men that I really admire, like we're talking like Patrick Bet David, family man. And it's like so honorable, like how he, like, almost more important than how you run your business, like how you run your family. Mm-hmm, like facts. This dude talking about reading quiet time and reading hour at his house. Mm-hmm. Like that's so cool. And like Jesse Itzler is like a big guy I love and like family man. And I read Scars and Stripes by Tim Kennedy, family man. And it's like
so that doesn't make you feel like the other way could be the right way.
So I don't believe in right or wrong. Okay. In that sense, like pedophilia, there is a right or wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So yeah, it's like they're like sometimes people say blanket statements, and it's like I don't believe that everything is so black and white. But it's like, dude, we're spinning on a rock right now. There's no up or down in space.
I mean, are like, we? I'm just kidding.
Yeah. That's a whole other episode.
or it's a simulation. Yeah. You know, but like people would believe that we're spinning on a rock right now. And it's like we were told that like we have a picture of the globe, like there's no like it, we someone one person was like, this is the way it is.
Yep.
It could be the other way. There's no up or down in space.
Yeah.
So it's like, so I don't know if it's right or wrong, but I do believe that all this time I've been living my truth because I've tried a monogamous relationship and because I thought, dude, I was like, let me just try it.
Yeah.
And dude, I hate, and maybe it was with the person.
Yeah.
People used to tell me like, one day you're going to meet someone and you're going to, you know, like old women tell me this, one day you're going to meet someone, you're just going to fall in love. I'm like, okay, grandma. And like, dude, I did meet someone. I did like fall in love and start to think, and I'm not saying, cause what if I would have What if I would have just done that with other people just because I thought it was the right thing to do? Yeah. I would have never felt it. So it's like, I'm grateful that I never pursued monogamy and marriage with people that I didn't feel it for. Because I do think a lot of people get pressured by society to have marriage and have kids, you know?
Yeah.
So
okay, let me ask you this then. Because you said you found a girl and everything changed. You're still with this girl?
Not with her, but
what happened, if you don't mind me asking?
Dude, it was a scenario of like I got a taste like my own medicine.
True.
In what sense?
In a sense of like, dude, I was with somebody who was saying certain things but not doing them, and then not sure, because you know she was also doing porn and she was also doing OnlyFans and stuff, and I started to get jealous. Bro, I've never been jealous in my whole life. Bro, I've dated OnlyFans girls and they're gonna go fuck so and so with a 12 inch whatever and do a split on it. I was like, dude, I could care less.
Yeah,
I don't like, it doesn't bother, like, because we're not really together.
Yeah,
like you're like top of the roster, you know, but you're not like I don't, it never bothered me. I hope you have all the fun in the world. I'm glad you're all tested.
Yeah.
With this girl, I was like, you're doing what?
Yeah.
With who? I was getting so possessive and controlling and crazy. It's all I could think about.
Okay.
And then you're seeing it like on Twitter, I was losing my mind. So it's like, dude, I was asking her to like quit her job and like, dude, lose so much money and all this stuff. And like she had like agreed, and then man, she had agreed to not do certain things, and I had caught her doing certain things.
Okay.
And it's like, dude, I'm such like a just don't fucking lie to me type of dude. Mm-hmm. Like I just hate being lied to.
Was that a open relationship, or was that like it decided to be monogamous? Well, I guess
no, we had decided to be monogamous. We both were just shooting with each other.
Oh, okay.
So it's like
So let me ask you this then. So you had then a moment in your life where you said, this is all I want, this is it. And then like you felt like that was so right.
For sure.
So then how, like I'm finding it hard now to understand how being open is right when you finally felt it for the first time and you were like, no, this is it.
Well, I think it's also like the person he's
saying. It's the person. It's not like I just woke. It's not like I just woke up one day.
Correct. But yeah. So it had, okay. So you're saying she ended up doing things and went against it, right? Went against your agreement. So now it's like, but had she never done that, would you still be with this girl 100% completely monogamous?
I mean, I can't tell the future. I don't know
for sure. But if you had to guess, if you had to guess,
yeah. I mean, that was probably like the deciding factor, and I just think that like maybe like she wasn't ready
for sure
for something super serious.
But forget her, you speaking to you. So had she been down?
So my thing is like, I don't know if like monogamy is what I truly wanted this whole time. I don't think that's it. I think that I met somebody where I was like, wow, I would be monogamous with her.
That made you want that.
Mm-hmm. Only because it was her. It's not like I woke up one day and got tired of fucking the hottest bitches. Yeah.
No, but sometimes sometimes that's what it takes. Sometimes it takes one person to shift your perspective. So now you know personally in your head, you're saying, oh, maybe there is another person out there who's going to make me want to be monogamous.
Yeah, for you know sure. You can feel it.
For
now.
Sure. I don't think that. And I never, if you would have told me this prior, like never.
Yeah.
Like, I met them all, you know, but like prior to meeting her, I'd be like, it's never going to happen.
Uh-huh.
Dude, I've had so many people tell me one day you're going to meet somebody or whatever. And I would just be like, nope, it's just not me. Yeah. And now I do know that can happen. I'm like, I'm open to it.
Yeah.
But it's like, I do think that age has something to do with it too.
Sure.
I think that there's a biological thing in men.
Yeah.
Where when we get 30 and like, also like I was trying to say, this is like, bro, I don't want to be 45 years old at Tootsie's.
Yeah,
that's the other thing.
You know what I mean? I don't want to be in a relationship. And I also don't want to be a cheating husband.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't want to just have kids to say that I have kids. I'll co-parent with somebody that I love and be in an open relationship before I become a cheating husband. So it's like, I do think that there's a way to have a family and have some type of... I've seen the most healthiest open relationships that are somewhat open. It's crazy because people don't talk about it. People don't say, oh yeah, my girl lets me smash a couple prostitutes a year and I let her do whatever sometimes. Because as a man, you don't ever want to say you that. Let someone smash some Adam 22. People would be like, that's crazy. Yeah. But I have personally met probably 50 plus couples that I know that there is some type of agreement where she can hook up with some people a couple times a year. He could hook up with some people a couple times a year. Or sometimes they do it one time and they get it out of their system.
Yeah.
Or sometimes they just get the fantasy from like just being in a situation where other people are hooking up. Sometimes they don't even swing.
Yeah.
You know? But when I went to a swingers club when I was in my 20s, it changed my whole life. Because if you go to swingers club, the one thing that's going to blow your mind is how many old people are there.
Wow. Mm.
It's like 80% people over 45, maybe over 50.
Damn.
And it's like you would never think, but I don't know if it's just age, just they just don't
try to spice things up or something at that
but
age.
It's crazy because they will be butt naked talking to each other like, hey, how are the kids? Oh, you know, so-and-so just finished med school. Oh, you and your husband look great out there. Yeah, I'll see you tomorrow.
Look great out there, like tap them on the butt.
Like they're right. Fucking dancing.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, bro, like some of the swingers clubs in Broward have been around for so long. Yeah. These people have been coming here for 20, 30 years with the same partner.
Yeah.
You know, I met a guy who is super against me doing adult stuff. He's very Christian or whatever. But he says he's married to a woman that lets him do whatever he wants. Mm. And she's into girls. And he brings home girls every once in a while as long as she approves. Wow. And they have some type. It's kind of open.
He was a Christian, bro. Yeah, I guess
that's what I'm saying.
You're saying, yeah.
You know, and I do think people are people. So like one thing that my pastor said that blew my mind is that, I was sleeping with 30 girls a month. You know, almost every day, twice in a day sometimes to make up for the other days. And it's like, I remember I was talking to my pastor and he had just got married. And I remember talking to him and I was like, dude, how did you and your wife go so long without like sleeping together? Like that's just, and he's young, good looking dude. I was like, how did you do that? And I'll never forget. He looked at me and goes, we slipped up a couple times.
Wow. Mm.
And I didn't even think that was possible.
Yeah,
I didn't even think that was an option. Like, bro, you're a pastor. You have to be perfect. But him saying that made me feel like, if anything, Christianity is even cooler now. Not because he's not perfect, but because he's supposed to be the most disciplined one. And even he has shortcomings.
Yeah.
So it's like, dude, you think all these Christian people aren't watching pornography? Even lusting over a girl is like a sin. So it's like, you know, just because you draw the line over here and I draw the line over here, like, dude, you might be looking at girls. I'm just touching them.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, I'm not saying that it's the same, but it's like, bro, you draw your line over here.
The
I draw
idea
my
is
line
the same, though. The concept. Yeah,
you're fantasizing about what I'm doing.
Yeah, it's the same shit. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Or you're watching what I'm doing.
Yeah, or you're watching what I'm doing. Yeah,
literally.
On that VR headset.
I mean, we talk about this a lot, right? Because, I mean, he comes at me. I'm single. He's been in a relationship, right? So we
how long have you been in a relationship for?
Long, bro.
Yeah. And I've been single long. You know?
Yeah. So no, but it's for
no,
me,
but he had a like I always say to him, he's in a special situation. He found someone that believed in him at an early age. Like imagine you found someone at 18, 19. That's like the next 10 years. I believe in your vision. Let's go.
Yeah.
Right. That's different.
Yeah.
And we always have the conversation where because he always tells me like, oh, like you should be in a or you should try like you can find someone. This I'm always like, oh,
I never said you should be.
No, but you can. You said I can.
I said you can.
I always say it's about the person. Of course.
Yeah,
and that's the hard part, right?
Yeah.
And what I'm saying is that for you, sometimes it's hard to see because you found that person earlier in your life.
Yeah, no. For
you know, like for him, me, for example, he was down to be monogamous up until 30. Like at 30, he decided, right?
Yeah, no. But I think that's the perfect point.
Yeah.
It's the person. And listen, like, again, you mentioned these guys. You mentioned, like, people that I think everyone in this room can agree. Like, we look up to Patrick Bet David, Jordan Peterson, you know, Jesse Eitzel. These are all, like, impressive dudes where you're like, man, if I could be even half of who they were, like, wow. What you know what I mean? What an accomplishment. And when I look at guys like that, they all seem to be family men.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right? So then that's where I start to go, okay,
but
maybe
then
not.
Look at someone like Elon Musk or David Goggins. It's like, I don't know what his family situation is like. I don't know if David Goggins is like the best dad ever. You know?
Well, then again,
you know, so it's like, there are guys that are super, super successful that you might not want as a dad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, absolutely.
You know, that might not be their calling in life, mm-hmm. is to be a father or to be like the best dad role model ever. And some people fall short in that category and they still are amazing men in other categories. And I don't know. I just don't think that it's like, I think that Christianity and religion has black and white rules where it's like, these are good men, these are not good men because this guy is having all this sex and this guy, whatever. But dude, you could be a guy that is on the right path, married, never cheated, but ignoring your wife sexually because you're watching porn.
Yeah. Facts. It's all the same shit. Yeah.
True.
So it's like, just the same. It's like, dude, you are jacking off every 2 seconds whenever you can and ignoring your wife's needs. And like, I tell people, dude, I have a friend who's like, bro, me and my wife been married for so long, but like, I'm just not into her like anymore. Like I just, we don't do anything. And I told him like, bro, stop watching pornography.
Yeah. Facts.
Stop watching pornography. Your girl should be the only thing that gets you off. If you travel, you shouldn't even rub one out. Because that's the way you're going to keep it going for you and your wife. Because biologically, you just fuck. You're going to, when she comes to the door, you're going to rip her apart. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's like, that's what like a woman wants. And it's like, also, it's like, also, it's like, and for women, it's like, dude, there's women that have abused toys. Like, we don't talk about this. People talk about like guys masturbating. People don't talk about how women have abused toys for so long. There ain't no way your shit's getting her off. Yeah. You know what I mean?
So you need the toy like, after. They need the toy.
Yeah, whatever, for sure. Yeah. The fucking vibrations, shit on everything. Gasoline, diesel. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's a fucking two-stroke.
You know? Things got Wi-Fi, bro.
Yeah, bro. It's got Wi-Fi.
No, so. But you know what? You know what I don't like? And you mentioned it too. And we talk about this a lot too. The pressuring of like marriage for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Like I feel like half the people married from like our generation, let's say 20, 30s, dude, half of them have been pressured by family or and you see it too. Why is the divorce rate at the all-time high, bro?
So it's like, dude, I always say there's a pendulum. So there was a time where like, dude, people got married at 16.
Yep.
Yeah.
Dude, crazy. You have people, grown men marrying, it's technically pedophilia, marrying 16-year-olds in like the late 1800s, you know, documented. Then you have people like, you know, they're getting married, you know, a little later or whatever. It's kind of weird to marry someone at 16. People getting married at 18 or 19. Then you have this like hippie 70 movement. And it's like, dude, sometimes people, it's like, oh, the world's getting crazy. Dude, my therapist is like 70 years old. And he was like, you think OnlyFans is crazy? Do you know what the fucking 70s were like? People were fucking in the street.
Yeah.
He was like, the 60s, we didn't even know about HIV. Nobody wore condoms. He was like, there was a place in New York called The Toilet. Just imagine what happened in that motherfucker, you know? So he's like, you know what happened in Germany at that time? Like other countries? Dude, my therapist tells me a lot of my problems are because I live in America. He was like, bro, you think in fucking Italy, they would give a fuck that the president was getting his dick sucked from his secretary?
Yeah.
No. He was like, dude,
no
one.
Happened, I'm pretty sure.
He was like.
No, thing. It was Clinton.
Bill Clinton. Yeah. He was like, do you think that would even be a problem in another country? They'd be like, of course his secretary. And he was like, dude.
Culture, yeah.
He's like, it's cultural. It's America. It's different. And he was like, but if you think that your parents weren't part of a crazy, fucked up sex and drugs crazed era, like you're out of your mind.
Yeah.
So a lot of times we just want to judge the generation that's going on now, but we're the ones who raised them.
Facts.
And then the same thing with the one previous to.
Yeah.
So it's like, bro, if you were born in the 70s, your dad was probably had dealt with like some type of war or was a strict dude. Didn't show his emotions. In the 70s, bro, people had long hair. Bro, if you had long hair, you were a fucking gay.
Yeah.
You had long hair and you were a fucking hippie. People called you, you know, a faggot.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, there's a whole generation who we know their parents were hippies. We're like, yo, they're so cool. You know, oh, your dad was a hippie, you know. But their dads was like, your son's a faggot, you know?
That's true.
So it's like, dude, every generation judges the next generation for being more outspoken. Bro, you have fucking AC/DC and Kiss. Bro, if you were listening to that type of music as a teenager, your parents thought you were fucking demonic.
Yeah.
You know, now we have, now it's also crazy. You have people, you know, the drugs and fentanyl and the lean generation, all this stuff. But it's like, I don't think that we're better or worse or whatever. I think we just have our own version of their version.
Yeah, true. Our own version, 100%.
So you think it'll come swinging back, though?
And people, it has to.
Yeah.
It always does, yeah, to some extent.
It's happening already. True. Patrick Bet-David, David Goggins, all these guys are super masculine people.
Yeah.
Even Andrew Tate. Mm-hmm. All these guys are super masculine people that are moving the pendulum the other way. And it's like, dude, for every... Opposites are the same thing inverted. So it's like, bro, for every Andrew Tate, there has to be... What's that crazy girl who's like that?
AOC.
Oh, AOC?
Is it? I don't even know. But like, there has to be an opposite of Andrew Tate. You know what I mean? So it's like, there's always going to be opposites that exist in the world. Mm-hmm. And it's like, dude, I don't know if there's a... I don't think my way is the right way, obviously. Yeah.
It's just your way.
Yeah. And it's like, dude, if you're not hurting people and you have love and peace in your life and you pray or meditate or have a spiritual practice,
you're good.
Yeah.
I also can be like, but I used to smoke crack. So it's like, so it's like, dude, my parents are so happy. My parents are like,
of course.
People are like, oh, did your parents care? Dude, my parents have dealt with so much.
Yeah.
I could come out trans.
Yeah.
And my dad would be like, that's my boy.
That's soft. Yeah. Soft compared to what happened.
My dad would be like, dude, he's still clean.
Okay, we're in with the rapid fire.
Yeah, we're getting some rapid fire for you, bro.
That's funny, man.
All right.
Holy shit.
I'll start off. Start life again at the age of 20 or stay where you are today.
Dude, I think if I started my life over at 20, I would just constantly be thinking about, I think I'd just be plagued. I couldn't even enjoy it.
True.
I would just buy Bitcoin and invest in real estate.
It doesn't sound too bad though.
I don't know. I'd probably just ruin it. I don't know. I don't know. You wouldn't have earned it. You would just know these secrets. True. I don't know.
Okay. Find true love or find someone who supports you.
Dude, if someone is your true love and they don't support you, it's not true love.
Mm. Boom.
Facts.
Let's go.
I think I was trying to change that question a bit. Okay. Do you have any regrets? Any?
Not buying more Bitcoin.
That's it?
Me too.
Oh, man.
Come on. One hit of the pipe? Anything like, that you did? Going to jail?
I regret not doing more drugs. I'm like, dude, I should have shot it.
Knowing that you were going to be sober for so long.
Crack. Yeah. If I could go back, I'd shoot crack.
Really?
Everyone's like, dude, you didn't shoot it? I'm like, no, dude, fuck.
That's insane. That's amazing. Okay, what would you tell your 15-year-old self?
Same thing?
Dude, no, I'd say don't kill yourself.
True.
I think like, man, I've struggled so much with mental illness and like suicidal. But like, dude, when I was 14, 15, if I had like a couple more loose screws, I probably would have been doing heinous, violent things, you know? And it's like, I'm so grateful that like my mental health isn't that bad. Because when I watch like what goes on in today's generation, a lot of times people are like, dude, like who the fuck would do this? But it's like, bro, when you're young and you just don't care and you just think nothing else matters, when you watch everyone else get in their fucking little happy ass cars and go to their happy little houses with their families all fucking put together, you just want to fucking
do bad shit,
do fucking horrible, heinous things. And it's like, I've had those thoughts as a kid, you know?
Yeah. Okay.
One lesson or trait you would want to instill in your children?
Man, probably read. Dude, I think, vibes. Dude, I'm such a big reader. And it's, dude, I meet so many successful people who can never read a book, you know? So it's like,
I'm still to this day, I haven't read a book.
You haven't read a book? Oh, you're God, so man. Crazy. You're out of your fucking mind.
I know, man. I know.
Oh
man.
My God.
We're going to get you on one day.
That's no, wild, because
you know, you're going to keep going.
I just don't have the interest. I'd rather watch things. I'd rather listen to things.
Well, people learn different ways.
You
too,
listen
right?
to books?
No.
Crazy.
When I say it's listen, crazy. More like podcasts.
When someone says they don't read books, it's almost like someone's like, I don't listen to music. Imagine meeting someone and being like, I don't listen to music. I don't have no interest. It's that much of a genre. It's that important in history. It's like books.
I know.
It's movies. I tried to make and music.
Bro,
I tried to make you read a bunch of books. I've been given books to buy.
Okay, I lied. There's one book I've read front to back. That's it.
Which one?
Atomic Habits.
Yeah, it's a good book to read. But that didn't make you want to read more. And that still didn't make me
want to read more. No.
That's crazy.
Then I tried another one. I'm like, it's too much.
Read one of PBD's books.
Patrick Bay David's next, your five next moves.
Yeah, or Choose Your Enemies Wisely. That's a huge one too. But
dude, I think every human being should read The Four Agreements. The Four Agreements is this big.
Yeah.
It's fucking spirituality for dummies.
Yeah.
It's written by Don Miguel Ruiz. Like when I said, like my first 5 years clean, like dude, I dove into spirituality. Bro, I met this dude. Like that's how into The Four Agreements. Like I flew out to do a book signing with him and his son. I met him in person. Dude, it is by far the best piece of literature I've ever written, other than like the basic text from the 12-step program. But it is so simple and easy and applicable. I would pay you to read it. It's that good. Like if everyone just read this book, $100. All
right. You don't got to pay me.
How many pages? How many pages?
I'll read it.
It's like 120 pages.
That's not bad. You can crush it in a day. $1
page isn't bad.
But The Four Agreements is so monumental and simple. And like anybody can grasp it that it blows my mind that so many people haven't read it. But I would say like Four Agreements, The Power of Now. Mm-hmm. God, what's this other one? I would just stick with those two. But there's this one that's so good. The Untethered Heart.
Okay.
The Untethered Heart to the something soul.
Okay, you hit me with it. Don't worry.
So you're reading like spiritual stuff.
I mean,
not like business stuff.
Well, I read everything now. But when I first got clean, I read a lot of spiritual books. Eckhart Tolle, like, dude, this guy, I would watch all his DVDs and stuff.
Sick.
Okay. Money or fame?
So nowadays, fame can be turned into money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's like, if someone gave you $50,000 or 50 million followers, you better take that 50 million followers.
All day.
I'm taking 50 million followers over a mil, too.
Yeah, probably. A 50 million follower Instagram account is probably worth.
I'm taking 50 million followers over 10 mil.
Yeah.
Easily.
Exactly.
It's more, so it's more like influence.
Fame and influence is like eyeballs, is worth money.
Yeah.
So it's almost like, dude, there are people that are so famous that they could do anything or sell anything. Marketing is a third of any business.
Yep.
So if you're famous, you have that on lock at any point in time.
At the highest level, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's like, dude, if you're famous, you could fucking do a giveaway for fucking $5 every month, a raffle on your account, and fucking make hundreds of thousands for the rest of your life. It would really...
It's true.
Yeah.
And you can't really buy fame.
No,
you can't.
We were talking about this the other day.
Dude, I've tried it.
Yeah.
You know, like, dude, I spent so much money in marketing and whatever. And it's like, dude, there are times where a fucking stupid $2 video gets way more views than a put together fucking $50,000 video.
I know.
It's facts. It's been facts, bro. Okay,
what's one thing you have never told anyone?
We're asking for a lot here.
Man. Trying to think.
Or at least told anyone on a podcast, we'll say.
Oh, on a podcast?
Sure. I was like, I told everyone everything.
Yeah, you have your own bro, so it's kind of hard.
I'm in recovery. Yeah. Like, you know, we're very big on, I have a therapist.
Yeah.
You know, man, something I never told someone on a podcast. I don't know. I've done.
It's a tough one.
What category? Like, what?
Well, the thing is, I feel like you, like, everything you've even fucking told us today has been like things people would never say.
I have 90 guns.
I like that. You told us that off camera, but we'll take it. 90 guns. I need 90 guns too. Okay. True or false? Being a man in today's society is the most difficult it's ever been.
No way, dude. Yeah. Who would ever say yes to that? Well, think about like in the fucking biblical era. What are we talking about? You know, it's like, dude, the Middle Ages. What? It's like not even comparable. It's like,
you know, World War II. World War II.
It's like, bro. It's probably the easiest time to be a man now than ever before. You could be a woman and be a man, you know? So it's like you could fucking, now it's like, dude, I don't know. It's like, dude, there is time where it's like, there's a time where nothing was photographed. Nothing was recorded. It was your word against someone else who had more money or power than you.
Yeah.
Dude, if you were a farmer, you died a farmer. There was no movement in social class. If you were poor, you were destined to be poor. Your whole family, what you were born into is what you're going to die into. And fucking, dude, in the gladiator period, it's like, bro, if you commit a crime, we might make you fight a lion and everyone's going to watch.
Yeah, it's fucked
up. So it's like, dude, it's like the Roman period. It's like, no. True.
Yeah, I hear you. I agree.
How much money do you need to make in Miami to live comfortably?
I'd probably say like 90, 80 grand a year.
It's not bad.
Maybe like 80 grand a year after taxes.
Better than Toronto.
That's to live comfortably.
Toronto, you need half a mil.
No.
Listen, 200? Toronto, fuck it. No, I think it's like 150 is which is number. Crazy.
Final question, baby.
All right, man.
Hit him.
Teddy.
Mm-hmm.
We're the MBH podcast. You know that, right?
Of course.
Obviously, you know that. Do you believe money buys happiness?
Money does buy happiness. And anyone who doesn't think that is just crazy. But happiness is a childish way to live. So chasing happiness is like a little kid chasing like a butterfly. You know, so it's like it comes and goes and it comes and goes. And when I first got clean, a lot of people, even myself, would think that I just want to be happy. But it's like being a drug addict is that. You're just trying to feel good $5 at a time all day long. But what I had to realize is that feeling good doesn't mean you're doing good. Feeling bad doesn't mean you're doing bad. There was times where I was feeling great. I was doing so bad in life. So just because you're not feeling good doesn't mean you're not doing good in your life. Sometimes if you're doing something great, you're going to feel like shit doing it. If you run a marathon, you're going to feel like shit the whole time, but you're doing something so great. And the ideal definition of like growing up and being a man is delaying gratification. And if you could delay instant gratification in exchange for long-term gain, now you're now an adult.
Yeah.
But if you don't get to that point, you'll be that little kid chasing happiness all the time. And even though like I did live like a sexual promiscuous life, I always knew that was just a childish fun thing that I was doing. I never sought refuge in that.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I always had prayer, always had meditation and like the 12-step program. I knew like that was really what mattered. Like doing service, helping people. To me, that is like the important thing. And if you help somebody, it might not even make you happy.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're like, fuck, I really didn't want to do that, but I did it anyways, just because I know it's the right thing to do. So doing the right thing might not always feel good.
True. Damn, that was fucking great, man. I don't think anyone's ever said that before. Happiness is like chasing the butterfly. It's true.
Comes and goes.
Comes and goes. But to live your life fully chasing that can be seen as childish for sure to some extent.
I just saw this cool interview that even Dan Bilzerian has now said that he's practicing monogamy.
Wow. Yeah, I just seen that too. Yeah.
And it's like, I don't think that his lifestyle prior was like horrible or wrong, because it seems like he's honest with these girls. He's not manipulating them or whatever. But I do think that like Kanye West, when you have everything, you resort to having nothing. This guy gave up everything. He doesn't even own an apartment.
The man doesn't have shoes, bro. He's walking around barefoot.
Yeah, it's like, bro, you have like these rich kids practicing homelessness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's like you always want what you don't have. True. And you always aspire to be what you can't or what's more difficult. And it's like even now, like I have jewelry and all this stuff. To me, like this is just what like the 13-year-old kid inside of me would want, you know? Mm-hmm. But it's not what I really think that matters. And even people... there are people that really pride themselves on not having material things. They're like, oh, I don't own any exotic cars or whatever. Even that in itself is another form of look at me.
Yeah.
You know, like the guy who, Sam Walton, who had all like the Walmarts, he prided himself that he drove his same shitty pickup truck all throughout town while being a billionaire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But he had like 22 jets.
Yeah. But also, like you said, that's a big, just like, look at me.
Yeah.
Like so instead of getting the Lamborghini to make everyone look at
you. Now you got the truck, which people would expect the Lamborghini, but the truck's a bigger flex.
Yeah. Exactly.
So it's still a flex. And dude, my friend was a monk for like 7 years, didn't masturbate for 7 years, damn, didn't use money.
That sounds like G.
Guy must my, have busted a crazy nut off his eye.
I wanted to ask, but I didn't. But,
would have been leaders, bro.
Didn't masturbate for like 7 years, lived in a monastery, was a monk, and he now believes that it was a cult. He thinks that it was totally unhealthy.
Wow.
And he thinks that the hierarchy there was who could be the most nothing. Wow. Like everyone was competing and trying to be the make the least amount of noise, do the least, be the smallest, the most humblest. And he thinks the people that own it, he's like trying to sue them now. It's crazy.
Wow. Oh, sure.
But it's like there's something in just being yourself.
Mm.
That is just being authentic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think like the most spiritual person is someone who could talk about how unspiritual they've been,
yeah,
and still are.
Yeah.
Like my pastor, he could have said, oh yeah, bro, it was just hard. Mm-hmm. But he got honest and was like, dude, I slipped up. To me, that's like real spirituality. I saw this thing. I know you're like, are you a Christian?
No, not really. I mean, I'm born a Roman Catholic, my family. Mm-hmm. But even then, like, we're not really... very religious. Gotcha.
Well, I saw this clip that was talking about the Bible, and he was like, we all know the story about David and Goliath. Mm-hmm. And a lot of us think that we're David and we're the ones who like slay Goliath. But he was like, no, we're the people in the crowd that are too scared to even do anything.
Mm.
Damn.
And he was like, a lot of times we read the Bible and we think that we're the characters in the Bible. We're not even
on the sidelines, buddy.
We're not even we're not even those people, you know?
Which is true. And I think like that's the part about life where we're like you said, we think we're not even participating. Half of the time people are just reading things, watching shit online, watching other people's lives play out. Meanwhile, they're just sitting on the sidelines.
For sure.
You're not even participating. So like being bold and making mistakes and making the wrong choices, at least you're fucking there. At least you tried something and at least for you participated. Sure. Instead of being the safe guy on the side who wants to make fun of this guy who tried this or support that or do this. But you're just on the sidelines, bro. What kind of life is that? You know, like, and I think that's the problem with everybody. They're so scared to just like get in the ring and get punched out.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's got to get punched out once in their life.
For sure.
You know what I mean?
I'll do it. Whoever needs to get punched out.
You know what I mean? Like metaphorically, you know what I'm saying? Like everyone's got to get in there and win.
I know some people that actually got to get punched out.
I know that too, but like, you know what I'm saying? So, but
killer episode, bro.
Wow, appreciate it, man.
I appreciate you guys.
Wow, a lot of gems, man. Our audience is going to love this. Appreciate you being open book, bro.
Yeah, for crazy. Sure.
Super honest, man. Thanks for the art.
Yes.
We got to shoot some guns soon.
Yeah, let me know anytime.
Appreciate it, bro.
With that being said, guys, you know what to do. I'm not even going to say it. I'm just going to say you know what to do. Mm-hmm. I'll leave it there.
And hit up Teddy, too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, all this stuff will be in the bio, in the comments. So if you want to hit him, he's open books. Guy will tell you whatever you want. All right? With that being said, appreciate you guys. Love you guys. And Jay?